Good. I get shot over. Hello, it's the day after, or damn it, how do I introduce the show? It's weird.
Aftermath.
Yeah, I know. Hello, it's the aftermath of day two of E3, which means day one has already happened with all the big Nintendo announcements. This is the Home Team Podcast. I am your host, James Jones, and with me today is a very esteemed friend who we've not heard from in a while. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello there, it's Greg. We're very excited to talk about all this Expendables 3 casting information. I've heard they've got Wesley Snipes out of the joint for tax fraud just for this.
Well, to be fair, when I watched Expendables 2, I was drunk and in Germany, so...
Probably, I'm fairly sure if you look at the fine print on the trailer, it actually suggests that you consume the film in that manner.
Yeah, so catch a flight to Germany, drink a whole pint of alcohol, have fun. So, we're actually here to discuss our reaction to what has so far been E3. So, yesterday was Nintendo's press Nintendo Direct. Yeah, I know, it's habit. Yesterday was Nintendo Direct. Nintendo did not have a traditional press conference. They did have a standing room only, quite literally, event later for the media to talk for a few minutes and then show some games. We had some additional videos come out through the YouTube channel containing announcements, but primarily the majority of our coverage has centered on, you know, a handful of games and the impressions we have for them. So, of course, if you want to go catch up on the news or those impressions, you can go to the website, NintendoWorldReport.com. But at the moment, we're just going to talk about the announcements. So, Greg, why don't you go ahead and give well, first off, let's go through what got announced, because I'm going to forget something.
Yeah, so, sure.
We saw Bayonetta 2 again.
Surprise with Bayonetta 2 was that it was playable, I think. Not that it would feature in the direct video necessarily. I think they might have that just to remind people that they've got this, you know, something a bit out of the box compared to the rest of the things they've got. But yet that it was playable on the show floor. Apparently it's got some sort of kind of Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword type touchscreen alternate controls, like casual mode or something. You know, so some new information as well. So maybe it's further along than we might have thought.
There was a multiplayer mode discussed as well, although I don't think it's playable at the show. Or that it may even exist at the moment. But we also got to see the other project that they have given us, Wonderful 101. We saw it again.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was expecting the reverse, that it wouldn't feature in the video, but it would be playable because it's going to be coming out fairly shortly, August, September, depending on where you are in the world. But obviously, it's something that was shown at the last E3, so it's kind of, I don't know how much, and it was shown at the sort of miniature Nintendo Direct just a few weeks ago with Pikmin, and I thought the stuff that was shown then was like, okay, well, that's a bit too close to coming out and a bit too old hat to kind of put in the real E3 Direct, so you're doing it now. But that actually kind of made a comeback, I imagine, mostly because they have the five-player multiplayer to talk about. And, of course, it is being demoed on the show floor. But it's very promising and all that. But I didn't expect it to show up in the video, that's all.
No. I mean, I played it at PAX, which was actually the E3 prior demo. So 10 months old.
Right.
Nice work, guys. It was enjoyable, certainly. It was a very weird thing to adapt to. But I'm excited for it. They actually announced that they will have a Nintendo Direct devoted entirely to that game, which is a mind-boggling thing to think about. Although they didn't give a time frame for when that's going to happen. You would assume sometime in the lead-up to the release.
Yeah.
We saw Pikmin again. Was that in the video?
I don't think Pikmin was in the video at all. Of course, it has a major presence on the show floor. You know, we've already seen impressions back from Johnny on the website. You know, he's played it and all. So, of course, it's coming out. It's July in Europe and Japan. I think it's just sneaking into August in America, perhaps. But it's very close at hand. So, obviously, that's going to be a big thing in terms of playable. But again, that's kind of what I assumed would happen. Is that, you know, that they've covered that plenty in the direct medium.
And if you're not hearing a lot of new things announced yet, this trend is going to continue. We got to see the 3D Mario that EAD Tokyo was working on, which was surprisingly somewhat a new super. Or excuse me, it was that was sort of a Freudian slip. It was Super Mario 3D World. on the Wii U, even
it was always a bit of an awkward name on 3DS with 3D Land.
It was incredibly
and
awkward.
Now it's something of a misnomer because this is not 3D in quite the same sense that that was 3D. It is a free-roaming Mario game. It's not a side-scroller, but presumably, unless they're going to add like support for TVs that could do stereoscopic 3D, it's certainly not going to have the auto-stereoscopic 3D that the 3DS has. But yeah, I mean, basically, I guess they're just trying to let you know that it is a sequel or a continuation of the kind of Mario game, the somewhat new kind of Mario game that they created with 3D Land.
New is an interesting word because I Freudian slipped it in there. But it is actually a four-player version of the 3D Land game. So very much following the arc the new Super Mario Brothers games took, which is there was a DS entry relatively close to a console entry that went and just expanded the format to a four-player game.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, it was like 3.5 years, 2006, 2009, whereas in this case, it's going to be 2 years. It's a bit tighter, mm-hmm. which has contributed perhaps to some people not being particularly bowled over. Perhaps some people, they played this not so long ago on 3DS, but I suppose that's the big thing with that one, is that how much of what they're doing in this is just adding multiplayer to it. For me, multiplayer could be a nice little side benefit, a little bonus. I might mess around with it a handful of times. But the real thing for me is going to be taking what they did in 3D Land, which I have great affection for, as I discussed when I was still on the show. Really, really enjoyed that game. And indeed expressed that I think it's ripe for a sequel that takes it further. Yeah, that as good as it was on 3DS, I felt like probably because they had to kind of get it out to save the 3DS ailing fortunes and so forth. You know, there were certain aspects that weren't quite fully fleshed out.
And there is some concern, and so I actually played this at the Best Buy demo events that were going on today and Saturday. And it was about a 7-minute demo. I played it with three other people. We played three stages, and they feel very much like that style of 3D Land levels that are somewhat akin to the levels in Sunshine where you don't have Flood, where it's just, it feels very just a bunch of platforms floating in space. Not much lateral exploration. And my concern after playing it, although I greatly enjoyed 3D Land, is that maybe this game is being built under a similar premise, which is, we need a Mario game out right now.
Yeah, well, it is a concern, although the good news, I suppose, in this case is that they are building on a template that's already been established. I mean, it must make it faster than when they kind of made this sort of Chimera Mario game, like sort of half a 3D Mario and half a new Super Mario Brothers kind of game that they did with 3D Land. They've already crossed that hurdle, and that's why I'm hoping what will come out of this is just, you know, sort of bigger, more imaginative level designs. Because, I mean, being portable, I think it was well suited to have the bite-sized little levels and all that kind of stuff. But there, whether you take it to a console format, you've got four players and all that, I'm hoping they're going to be able to do something, the stuff that really kind of pushes it a bit more. I mean, clearly, I think one thing, just from a visual sense, is that it's not going to have the same kind of razzle-dazzle quality in a E3 Direct video that Galaxy did when that was announced.
Not.
You know, it just isn't like as eye-catching as that, even though, of course, it's on a HD system there, a lot more powerful and all that kind of thing. The graphics in 3D Land, apart from the stereoscopic 3D, which was quite impressive, but of course this won't have that, they're more functional than anything else. You know, like they're, like you said, they are like void levels. They're not really kind of completely constructed worlds or anything. So, I mean, there's a functional aspect to those graphics. So I think it's not particularly well suited to blow people away just watching a video, however stuttering in bandwidth, at home. But in terms of the kind of fun that it could deliver, I'm very, very confident in it, because of how much I like 3D Land, B, because everything that EAD Tokyo has done, going all the way back to Jungle Beat on the GameCube. I think this style of Mario games got plenty of legs in it, and certainly the bosses could be vastly improved over the rather sort of basic and limited range that they had on 3DS. And the one that they showed with those sort of giant snake worm things, whatever they were, with plates on the head and all, I mean, that sort of straight away, visually and in gameplay terms, going to look more interesting than what we've already seen in 3D Land.
So actually, that was the boss that I got to play. It was basically, you had to use the new power-up, which is the cat suit, which lets you climb up walls.
Yeah.
And occasionally, these snakes would pop up out of the ground with plates on their head, and you're trying to knock out the king snake, I guess, and sometimes the plate would have a power-up on it, the cat's bell, which lets you transform into the cat. Sometimes it would just be the snake's mouth open and you'd get hurt. So there was a sort of internal race to be the one who gets the bell against the your other compatriots you're playing with.
Yeah, that competitive, cooperative sort of tension that they've had in the other multiplayer Mario games.
While trying to manage the risk of the fact that what comes out of the ground may not be what you want it to be, and may in fact be dangerous to you. But once you got it, you then climbed up the tallest snake and then basically did a butt stomp on the head of the boss. So it wasn't tremendously creative. I mean, if you butt stomp on the boss's head.
I mean, bosses
heads,
have never been a major
really,
part of Mario. I don't expect them to be, you know, like something from a treasure game or something, but something more than some of the new Super Mario Brothers games. 3D Land, you know, they can be really quite narrow. Well, perhaps not more so than Mario 64, where it was the same one three times for the most part. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, it doesn't have to be mind blowing, but I appreciate the extra effort that it seems like they're making in that area, just off this very small sample, of course.
It felt very comparable to the Bowser Jr. fights in 3D Land, as compared to the Bowser fights, which were relatively tedious. So,
Mean in Galaxy 2?
Galaxy 2, yes.
Yeah, like the cloud one, or like, yeah, I mean, that's a good, for me, those are good examples of what a Mario boss battle, like the kind of level they could be sort of pitched at, I think, and be comfortable.
And it's just, I imagine playing it single player would be a much more focused experience, whereas multiplayer, it was more the chaotic rush for the item. So the boss basically just died, and I was completely unaware of why, but in my rush to get the item, someone had actually been doing damage.
Well,
so it's a very different feel because of the fact that those games are very fast. They're much faster than a new Super Mario Brothers game in a lot of ways. So the screen is constantly panning to keep up with the person in the lead. So there's a certain amount of contention you're going to have just in that.
Yeah, but that is one of the big questions, isn't it? Relative to a side-scrolling platformer with four players, how are you going to manage the camera and the whole bubbling up thing? Like, how does that work? Because it's definitely there.
Yes,
they've definitely brought that over. But does that work quite as well as it did in 2D? You know, it's not a trivial addition by any means. The multiplayer, it could be, and certainly that helped New Super Mario Bros. Wii sell an enormous number of copies, but whether it's going to work quite as well in 3D is something that's yet to be sort of seen. And the other point is, there's probably quite a lot of people that just realistically aren't going to get to play it with three other friends very often, and so I think that's why it may not be eliciting great outpourings of enthusiasm as the sort of big reveal. Although it was obviously, we knew it was going to be an EAD Tokyo Mario game, so a sequel to the one they just did was hardly out of left field.
I think there was discussion of it'd be a sequel to the one they did prior, or a sequel to the one they just did.
Yeah, I mean, if they had done a sort of even Spanglia Galaxy type game and all that, I mean, there would have been merits to that. But I think they felt they made progress with 3D Land in terms of making a 3D Mario more accessible, and I think they want to keep going in that direction. It's certainly, the suggestions out of Japan were that 3D Land was selling, sort of trending better than the Galaxy games did on Wii, which had pretty big user base when they came out. But then its sales kind of, it's the tail of 3D Land sales have undoubtedly been cannibalized by New Super Mario Bros. 2. Because there's always going to be people that come and say, I'm buying a 3DS, I buy the Mario game that goes with it, and 3D Land has kind of been usurped by New Super Mario Bros. 2 in that way. So, but I still think they felt like they made a step in the right direction, and they're going to keep going. And certainly, based on how much I enjoyed it, I'm really looking forward to this. I think very surprised if they didn't nail it and produce something vastly... might not be that gaudy or impressive in an aesthetic way, but I think in terms of gameplay it could be great. And one thing, the catsuit's interesting to me because of the vertical element that it can introduce to level design without flight. You know, we've seen flight in 3D Mario games has not been very prominent in recent years. You know, 3D Land just had the Tanuki suit. It was like a Yoshi flutter jump, it wasn't flying. You know, this catsuit is going to add a sort of vertical dimension that the more recent 3D Marios haven't had. It'll be interesting to see how they work that in.
I think in a single player, it's a very different vibe. So the levels they had for demo, when you were using the cat suit, you could climb quite high up the wall before it loses its grip and you fall back down.
Right.
And there were lots of secrets that I found trying to climb up there. The problem was in the multiplayer, people who didn't have the cat suit were continuing down the path, and I was basically getting auto bubbled over to them every time the leader would push the screen over.
Right. I wonder if there's any option, you know, given that you have the gamepad screen, whether, say, for instance, if it was just two players, you could be like almost completely independent. I mean, I would assume that wouldn't be the case because they'd probably just enforce it across the board, you know. However.
Right.
But it would be kind of cool if you could do that, just totally divorce yourselves from each other and kind of just, if there's a lot of, I know there's green stars to find in this, probably just swap them out for the star coins or the comet medals or whatever. I mean, if there are things to find and all that, it could be nice just for you to go your separate ways and find them separately. You know, that, I would be in favour of that, but I kind of like it. Does it probably is just going to be, you know, if you're all anchored to like one person, is it?
Yeah, I think that would make the experience of playing it very different though, because the cat suit is quite well suited for hiding things. So playing it single player, you could be much more thorough in exploring the level, whereas in multiplayer, it's much more of a almost like just cannonball run to the goal.
Yeah, there's a certain momentum that has to be sustained, I suppose.
It's an interesting game that I'm curious to see what ideas they bring to it. Like you said, it doesn't show that well on Nintendo Direct. It's a lot of earth tones. It's not very whimsical. I mean, insofar as a giant dinosaur, it's not very whimsical.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still, I mean, certainly some of that stuff, I think, there's going to be scenarios that have a bit more grandeur than anything you saw in 3D Land, but perhaps not comparably
like
grandiose as Galaxy. I think that's probably, it's going to be a bit more grounded.
So, they also, another game we knew was coming, they showed Mario Kart 8. As much as I revile that name,
by your count, we should be up to 11 now, because I think there's another arcade game coming out in Japan, or it's already
endless. So we saw this game features. All right, so there's some F-Zero elements in play here, at least to a certain extent. You can go on the sides of walls. They were calling it anti-gravity, but that's not how anti-gravity works. It's more like really, really good surface tension, but basically, the levels sort of Mobius strip around like you're dealing with an F-Zero stage. It looks very good.
I was struck by how pretty it looks, actually. I wasn't expecting. Mario Kart games have not been the prettiest games in there. You know, they've not been one of the more impressive games. I'll go back to Mario Kart 64, Double Dash, Mario Kart Wii. They're generally functional looking, but I was surprised by how sort of pretty it looked, actually. But I mean, not that's terribly consequential with a game like Mario Kart, but you add that to the sort of surreal gravity defying twisting courses and it is visually more interesting than Mario Kart's been in a while. Hopefully that'll be reinforced with some of the choices for track environments, you know, some more Mario stuff rather than Moo Moo Farm or whatever.
Right, so one of the ones we have seen is Luigi's Mansion, which fits quite well here because there are boos floating about and you going on the side of a wall in Luigi's Mansion is not particularly unnerving. It's something that happens in the game. And that stage was actually on display today when I was watching it live. I was kind of struck by how fast it is. The game looks quite smooth and quite quick. So I'm cautiously optimistic. A lot of stuff from Mario Kart 7 returns. The transforming carts there. It visually, it bears a lot of the same stylistic decisions that started the ferment in Mario Kart in Mario Kart Wii and then carried over into the Mario Kart 7. it's visually an evolution of those two games.
And it's kind of a mashup of those two games in the point that you've got 12 races again, so you've probably got broader tracks like Wii. You've got the bikes coming back from Wii, but you've got the gliding and the underwater from 7, and the coins are back from like 7 as well. So it really is those two kind of mashed together. I mean, obviously, this is 2014. It's not going to be out this year, so a bit further away. There may be a number of things yet to be revealed about it, but I mean, the one thing that I'm always looking for from a new Mario Kart is more substantial and differentiated single player content, and we don't know anything about that yet. But the one thing you'd expect from I think Wii U would be perhaps some sort of double dash type functionality, because you've got the gamepad. You could be like double dash, except this time you could actually aim the shell that you're firing from the back position in the car using the gamepad or something like that. It seemed like a pretty natural thing to do, and yet I think if they had that in the game, they'd be talking about it already.
I wouldn't think so.
And that underscores a trend, you must say, in the whole, everything they've shown is just how marginalized or downplayed or just plain absent anything, any really, gamepad unique kind of features have been. Asymmetric multiplayer is kind of been banished from the lexicon at this point. There are obvious opportunities like the double dash style co-op that I just mentioned, or indeed in Wind Waker HD. Got the Tingle Tuner functionality from the original game, where somebody could be sort of tingle. I never used it, but my understanding was that somebody with the GBA could be sort of tingle up on his balloon and drop bombs on enemies to help, perhaps a younger or less experienced player progress through the game. And you think, well, you've got the gamepad there, that functionality, you could possibly build on it and make it more integral to the game, because everybody's got a gamepad who owns a Wii U, whereas of course that was the problem with connectivity, is as every do you have all the equipment required to do it back in the GameCube days, and that's been replaced with the Tingle Bottle, which is just sort of more intricately integrated Miiverse hints, and so it's still the spirit of the feature helping a player overcome things, but in a very different way.
Right.
And I think that's, again, it's quite surprising how they seem to have soured on using the asymmetric kind of gameplay as a selling point. I think where they've already, with the experience they've had with Nintendo Land or Game & Wario and some of the other things that they showed before, that it's not a goer. It's not convincing to people, or it's confusing or whatever, and they're not going to try and sell people on the Wii U with that as the main thrust of the argument.
Yeah, it was a weird omission, because it seemed almost inevitable that was what was going to happen with the Tingle Tuner content. So to me, that was the more surprising part of the announcement. Now, the fact that the visual style doesn't really seem to resemble the screenshots they released 5 months ago.
It's different again, isn't it? I'm sure that fits a certain amount of feedback must have been incorporated there.
Yeah, it looks much closer to the game that was on the GameCube now. Again, I saw this running today. It looks really nice. It's a very pretty game. The demo was one of the worst demos I've ever seen in my life. It was a very Nintendo demo.
Well, they can only choose from the sections of the game that are done, James.
Well, yeah, I know, but if you remember, the first 20 or 30 minutes of that game, Link's running around on the beach with no items.
Yeah, it's an island. Blue.
That was the demo.
Well, I mean, not the most obvious place to choose from, but I mean, I was encouraged by some of the other things. I talked about the fact you're going to be able to unlock faster sailing because the world's already loaded into the, they've got more memory and stuff, so they don't have to slow you down as much as they did on the GameCube for those technical reasons. And I think that's important, because a lot of people that are going to buy this game are going to be replaying it, and I think replaying it is a lot more more palatable if you could take some of that drudgery of just sailing again to some other place really quite slowly out of it. I mean, Wind Waker is, I had replayed it quite soon after I played it the first time. I played it the sort of new game plus-y kind of thing where you go around in this outset island garb and you can right. understand the ancient Hylian that the other characters talk to each other, which you couldn't before. And so I did play it again, but it's not something I've ever been desperate to go back to because of some of those pacing issues. And so I think it's important, you know, do this HD remake to do what you can to ameliorate that kind of stuff. And in the developer interview that they put on the YouTube channel, Enuma made fairly specific reference to the Triforce Hunt at the end. Mm-hmm. So I would certainly be, seems pretty clear that something's going to happen there. So I mean, that definitely makes me more apt to replay it,
right.
Beyond just the graphical nicety of seeing it in high definition.
On the other Zelda front, although we know there's a Zelda game in development, they basically just said it wasn't far enough along to really show, although apparently they considered
it. I mean, you could have guessed that from the last
right.
time they did mention it. It was like, well, we are making one, and we're thinking of making it less linear, so...
Yeah.
I bet you're glad you bought a Wii U now. You know, it was pretty desperate stuff at that time. And I mean, I think that's the thing with this. There's been a lot of kind of response that it was underwhelming, or you know, didn't really deliver this direct. Considering the stakes are high, seemingly, you know, with the Wii U struggling as it has been, you need something to kind of give it a shot in the arm and get it going again. But I mean, I think for me, yeah, it wasn't all that impactful on a personal level, but at the same time, I never thought it would be, because
right.
unfortunately, you look at the past directs, and they were, you know, I mean, you've gone from a time where, you know, E3. 2010 was it, with stuff like Donkey Kong and Kirby's Epic Yarn and Golden Sun like just being announced out of the blue, and
yes.
they're going to be out in a couple of months, to you know, saying things like, oh well, we are making that game, you just, you know, we haven't actually started making it yet, you know, they're so, we've gone from just that policy of like not talking about a game until it's 6 months from coming out, to we'll talk about anything anytime because we're so desperate to have people realize that there are games coming for this platform.
And that's sort of a swing back to the GameCube era, where they would talk about a game seemingly eternity in advance of its release.
Yeah, which of course leads to vaporware inevitably,
right.
you know, when you do that. And that's the thing. I mean, so for me, there couldn't be that many surprises in store, because I don't see why you'd, you know, I mean things like X, you know, the Monolith Soft game.
Yes.
I think in years past, you know, they might not have shown anything, any kind of, I mean, it's still 2014, it's still some way off, but I'm not sure we would have seen what we saw of it, you know, a few months ago. At that point, you know, it might have saved that for E3, but you know, they were so desperate to just give people a sort of reason to cheer for Wii U that they did it back then, and then of course we got more footage now, but it just, that sense that they really couldn't be holding on to too many things. It was really a question of, you know, what form would the Mario game take, and
right.
then also what were Retro Studios up to.
And that's nice. Thank you for the wonderful transition. It turns out Retro Studios making another Donkey Kong Country game. This one called Tropical Breeze.
Yes, that subtitle is interesting. It sounds like something you'd call Mango Sorbet if you were marketing it to a child. But
so Home Team was comparing it to one of those like fruit shakes. So
yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much where we're at now.
That is a very curious subtitle. But I mean, again, with retro, this kind of became, you know, what people might project their hopes for the whole kind of conference on, because it was the sort of, as in the Rumsfeldian parlance again, the great known unknown. We
right.
knew they were working on something, we just didn't know what it was. But I mean, you have to cast your mind back to some of the things that we've heard over the past year, really, and we had a recent reminder with the story that Tom Ivey, I think it was, who's one of the lead designers, one of the senior people that worked on the original Donkey Kong Country Returns, has left Retro. You know, they've had a lot of people leave Retro over the past few years. Actually, they've been hiring a lot of people as well. So it's kind of in transition, and it doesn't surprise me that if they've been going through that kind of transition, they would choose something not as ambitious as, say, a completely new IP. A new kind of game to try and sell the Wii U on. It's something that's building on something they've already done would seem to make more sense to me if they've been kind of going through this kind of upheaval. So it didn't surprise me that it would be either sort of either DK or Metroid. And then in terms of the commercial merits of either one, obviously DKC Returns sold a lot more units than any single Prime game did.
Right, because the Metroid, I mean, there is a certain loss leader quantity to the Metroid franchise.
I mean, I think 3 sold over 1 million units worldwide ultimately, and you had the Prime trilogy and all that, you know, and they haven't been like completely unsuccessful or anything, but the DKC, right, I think sold over 5 at least the last time.
It was
time
a very successful game.
So it was successful and probably not that expensive to develop and all that, so I mean, it makes sense in that way. But I would say the counter argument to that is, what did the Wii U launch with? New Super Mario Bros. U.
I know.
And the thing about that is a 25 or whatever it is, you know, million seller on Wii, yeah, and DS. It's massive. It's absolutely enormous. And yet you put it on launch day with Wii U, and you know, we are still where we are with the Wii U, you know, barely selling any appreciable units since the launch period itself, where it sold about 3.5 million. And so you have to say, well, you know, is DKC the kind of game that people will buy if they have the system, but they won't buy the system before it? Because that right. seems to be what New Super Mario Brothers is, and there are obvious similarities between the two. Whereas yes. perhaps Metroid, not likely to sell as many copies on an already successful console, but there might actually be more people that would say, oh, there's going to be another Metroid on it. Well, you know, people who are Nintendo fans that have owned other Nintendo consoles, there's clearly a lot of them on the bench at the minute, as it were, not right. getting into the Wii U arena, and Metroid might actually get them in, you know, some of those people. But the thing is, probably not in that greater numbers, it would seem, from the sales of previous games. So it's neither one of them is to me a system seller if you did a new DKC or a new Metroid. And so, but perhaps Metroid's a sort of weak system seller, and then DKC's good if other games manage to sell the system. It could help. Right. You could just make money off the software sales. So
That is a 2013 game, though.
That is going to make it this year, so that's why I'm talking about the commercial. So, you know, cause right. I mean, it's very close now, and this holiday season is being kind of built up as make or break for the console. So it is really important stuff commercially. And like I said, neither one of those represents a brilliant option, but then a new IP would be risky. I mean, you know, right. I don't know how many great choices they had here.
There's no safe play here. And we don't necessarily know this is the only thing Retro was working on.
No, as I said, I mean, this transition that's going on with the personnel right. there, it may be when they come out of it, they may be produce something perhaps a bit more ambitious. Because, I mean, the thing with this, what the main thing seems to be, I mean, it's kind of tacking a little bit back more to the old DKCs that Rare made, because you've got mm-hmm. Dixie Kong coming back, you've got underwater levels coming back, which I must say, when they were absent from DKC for Wii, I was quite relieved, because they were yes. not my favourite part of those games. So, and it seems like they're going to be a bit different, because there's like Sonic-style air bubbles down there. So, I mean, I'm not sure. It's kind of cool that they're coming back. Water levels are always a good excuse for something pretty, and indeed, pretty music with the David Wise, the old mm-hmm. Rare composer, I think he's coming back to work on DKC alongside Kenji Yamamoto, who, I mean, the DKC Return soundtrack is, you're pretty slavishly adherent to the DKC themes, and so, you know, it's nice, but at the same time, you know, there's nothing particularly exciting about it, apart from like the last world where it really is Metroid Prime meets Donkey Kong Country. Whereas I think by bringing Wise back, I think you'll be able to have new songs that still have a sort of recognisable DKC feel to them. So I think for big fans of the old DKC music, that's cool. And then there's this whole Super Mario Brothers 2 angle where you can uproot things from the ground and throw enemies at other enemies and all this kind of stuff. So not really sure how much of a substantial difference that's going to make. But other than that, it really seems like what they're doing now is taking the whole spectacle of the original DKC Returns to another level, where you know, because now it seems like they really have built the levels much more kind of comprehensively rather than like a diorama kind of thing that they were before. Which still, I mean, there's still some really impressive moments in DKC Returns where the environment is changing or collapsing and all this kind of stuff. Here they're rotating it all the way around, and it's very pretty and quite impressive, but how, you know, substantial that is in gameplay terms, I'm not too convinced yet.
I am somewhat surprised by this recent rash of Donkey Kong Country games. So obviously there was the original Donkey Kong Country Returns, and then we just had the 3DS port come out.
Yeah, I have actually been playing the 3DS version because of Nintendo's very generous free game offer over here.
Yeah,
with you both
quite upset about this offer not coming to North America, but.
Yeah, but I mean, having played it recently, I've reinforced in my opinion, it's an excellent game, the original Donkey Kong Country Returns.
I wonder if they're rehabbing the Great Kong's image to some extent and trying to escalate its priority on the pantheon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's got a lot of name ID, Donkey Kong. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, for stuff that's kind of completely unrelated, going back just to the 80s arcade game and all that. But, I mean, I could see why they're trying to kind of build it back up. But, you know, like I said, my problem is just a side-scrolling platformer. And I, you know, as I've often said, one of my favourite things about the Wii was how it brought those back. And I'm certainly glad that, you know, it seems like it's going to keep going, that it wasn't just a kind of fly-by-night thing for a few years with the Wii, and then when Nintendo made HD console, they abandoned that altogether. I think it's great that you're going to have, you know, another year in a row where that is still an important part of their holiday season, but I'm still not sure whether it's going to be enough. You know, you've got that and 3D World, I should say.
Which is sort of like a 2.5.
You've got both platformers. You know, it's not the ideal combination. Now, me, I love platformers. I know Guillaume feels similarly as well. You know, the platformers are pretty much catnip to me. I'll enjoy both during that time. But whether it's what the doctor ordered in terms of, from a business point of view, is another matter.
It is a certain distinct lack of variety in that respect. So one thing that the last real major announcement, unless I'm forgetting something, that we knew was coming was the reveal of the two Smash Brothers games, both the 3DS and the Wii U game.
Yeah.
Such as it is. So the Nintendo Direct had a relatively long trailer, kind of done in the Sakurai style, where it's not really from the game, you know, maybe it's in-engine stuff, where it's characters just being ridiculous. And then followed by your standard just, oh my god, reveal.
Well, it was quite confusing because there was a moment where the aesthetic sort of changed.
Yes.
And that first time that I was watching it, you know, immersively I was watching it after it originally went out, so it wasn't like cutting out or anything like it was for people.
I was watching the Australian feed, so I did okay.
Yeah, I heard apparently UK was like alright and America was completely screwed, but like, when I was watching it, even it was kind of confusing because it's like, well, okay, well, the character's got a big thick outline around it,
right,
and now the outline's kind of disappeared and you sort of flaked out into this slightly different looking Mario. But it was the difference between the way it looks on 3DS and the way it looks on Wii U. Like that, you know, once you've had a little time to think about it, it's pretty obvious, but just like at first blush you're kind of like, well, what's going on here? This sort of Street Fighter 4 style outline, you know, it's just an homage to that. But what it is that, and it is a natural concern, is playing something as visually busy as Smash Brothers on a small screen. They're trying to make the characters stand out more by adding this big outline. Although, I mean, Smash Brothers, of course, the big reason why it's so difficult to keep track of everything is because it has to frame everyone on the big screen,
yes.
You know, because it's four players on the same screen. Whereas with 3DS, I mean, everyone's going to have their own screen, so I'm assuming it's going to be a bit tighter on you anyway at all times.
Well, but, I mean, you still need to know where everybody is. So
no, it's true, but it doesn't have to gazoo all the way out.
It doesn't have to give you that, like, when you're doing Hyrule Castle on the N64.
Yeah, or, like, New Pork City in Brawl and, you know, all the really sillily big ones and all that kind of stuff. It could tighten up a bit, so that'll help too, but...
And I imagine they'll keep that in mind when they do the level design for the 3DS version.
Well, they made very specific reference in the developer video as well to the fact that the levels, while the characters would seem to be pretty much the same across the versions, the levels will be quite different in that they're going to sort of draw on portable history for the portable version and then console history for the Wii U version. So they highlighted this with the fact that, you know, on the 3DS you're going to have a Spirit Tracks level on the train with little conductor link in the background, and then on Wii U you're zipping around Skyloft from Skyward Sword. So.
Right. In true Sakurai fashion, the screenshots he released were manic and completely insane, including the reveal of the Animal Crossing villager.
Yeah.
With the text, "Villager comes to town, so fuck you, Sakurai." And all his screenshots basically involve him either smiling while dropping heavy objects on people's heads or planting trees in the middle of fights.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a comedy character. Then you had Mega Man, who, you know, that's always been such a natural fit. You know,
he got his own trailer right after the first trailer.
Yeah, kind of like the Snake thing back in 2006, but a little bit more. But, you know, the Snake thing was just him getting out of the box and saying, "Showtime," if it was the Japanese version.
This was Mega Man first. You actually saw him fight in-game.
You had music, you had all his different powers, you had a good look at the Wily stage, you know, Wily's castle behind him. You know, it was really nice reveal for Mega Man, and it's such a natural choice. I've always thought if there was two characters from other companies that should be in Smash Brothers, it would be Mega Man and Simon Belmont, and they've got one of them. So I'm kind of hoping, they worked with Konami before with Snake, I hope they can get Belmont in it too. But
so,
he looks great. I mean, he looks
does.
Classic Mega Man, looks perfect, fits in with Smash
Bros. Powered up character model.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit more like chibi-ish, isn't it? The powered up
one. It's
going for that kind of vibe. You know, this is classic Mega Man from the NES days.
So we had that. That pretty much wrapped up the conference, unless I'm forgetting anything.
Was afterwards that they had the whole Wii Fit Trainer thing.
Yes, so after that, they had the press briefing at their booth, and during that, they revealed an additional character, which is the female trainer from Wii Fit, which... Oh my god!
Is this going to be kind of like a replacement for Game & Watch in the silhouette character department?
Possibly.
I mean, and also just the goofball, the kind of comedy character.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with putting a character like this, it is funny, but at the same time, you know that it will offend everyone who is a fan of a particular character that does not make it in.
You know,
Little Mac doesn't get in this time, or you know, somebody wanted like Shulk from Xenoblade or something, and the Wii Fit Trainer is in there, they will take it personally.
I have to say, the reveal trailer when it came out seemed to have calmed the storm that was internet rage about the announcement. But it is Sakurai basically just trolls for fun, I think, at this point, because the trailer, if you haven't seen it, you need to see it. But it's basically Mario, Link, and Kirby trying to do yoga while playing Wii Fit and failing miserably at it, and then her coming up behind them and just beating the ever-living hell out of them.
Just doing
workout moves, so not actually hitting them, but like doing the same moves that she does in Wii Fit, but doing damage at the same... It's completely mentally disturbed and frightening and amazing and absolutely just psychotic.
But for me, the goofiness and the screwball quality is a big part of what I get out of Smash Brothers, so I'm glad to see that they're kind of continuing that, you know, and hopefully they'll have plenty of like your bona fide kind of character additions that will quell anybody who feels particularly aggrieved.
For me the highlight of her appearance is in the English language version, at least. In the Japanese language version is different, but in the English language version she has this very monotonous voice that, and she's just giving workout instructions while she's pummeling people. It's very weird. it's kind of like a surrealist painting of a game at this point.
It sounds a bit like the Mars Attacks bits where they're just speaking through the translator saying, "We are your friends," while melting everyone.
Pretty much. I mean, it's a weird addition, but it fits. It fits really well, and it is an acknowledgement of more recent Nintendo history than we're used to in the Smash Brothers games. And I think, to that extent, it makes sense. So, handheld, we didn't see basically anything except Pokemon X1.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. I mean, clearly, with the 3DS Direct that was held a few months ago, we had some really major announcements, like the Link to the Past sequel remake thing, and a Link Between Worlds, as it's known now, and obviously Mario Luigi Dream Team, or Dream Team Brothers, depending on where you are in the world. There's some really big announcements for 3DS, and it's kind of okay, well, they've got that bit kind of out of the way. They know that it's Wii U that needs the good PR, so they've and of course Pokemon X and Y themselves were announced in a Direct earlier in the year as well. So I found it odd that they had Pokemon X and Y to kick it off, because this game is going to be a juggernaut. It doesn't need extra.
It doesn't need the coverage. And in fact,
to announce the fact that there is a fairy type of Pokemon,
and they've retroactively moved Pokemon into that category,
that's super effective against dragons or whatever. I mean, it's not. And there's the Pokemon Ami. I'm sure you enjoyed that bit of wordplay.
Oh God, I wasn't. I missed it because I was still trying to watch the North American feed.
Oh, so you were spared that for the time being.
Oh yeah, that came out later when I started processing press kits. And went,
It basically is like some sort of Nintendogs type functionality with you to bond with your Pokemon by petting them and feeding them and things like that.
Oh God, they could just put that as a game on its own.
I'm kind of surprised they wouldn't actually, but yeah.
It is kind of shocking.
The point stands though, that this is such an enormous, of all the 3DS, if you're going to have one to have in this Direct at all, that probably wouldn't have been the one I picked. But I guess it kind of dovetailed with the roundtable event that we're having later on in the day. But that was a curious choice to me, although it was fleeting, so it wasn't particularly consequential. Although, of course, the video itself was only 38 minutes long. So, I mean, it's still...
Every second counts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The roundtable that came later in the day was much more informative about the game. It introduced the fact there'll be two new types of battles. There's these horde battles where you're fighting up to five different Pokemon at one time.
Yeah, and it's just one Pokemon on your side.
Right.
And then there's five wild Pokemon against you. That's kind of, that is actually kind of an interesting tweet. I guess all those, those area of effect attacks that hurt everyone become a lot more at a premium in that scenario.
And then they have the fight battles. I can't remember if they're called flying battles or fight battles, something like that, where any Pokemon that can fly or has hover, so they made it very important to point out that Haunter could fight in these battles, can participate, but no one else can. So if it's a ground-type Pokemon or a Pokemon that can't fly, it's out, and it can't participate in those fights. Beyond that, they said there's some other tweaks that involved that battle mode, but they didn't go too much into it. The game world has changed. It's still a grid-based, but you can move diagonally. They've introduced things you can interact with the environment more, like you could swing on vines. And interestingly, or as I referred to it while I was trying to live tweet the event, in a wish fulfillment, they made it so you can ride your Pokemon. It affects the environment in ways that had previously been done by hidden moves. And I'm not sure if that means hidden moves are out or if they've just been relegated. So the example they gave was moving rocks that are in the way if you're riding a Rhyhorn.
All right.
Which is distinctly the very first hidden move, the second one you get in the Pokemon franchise.
And it's interesting because they've had the idea, like from Pokemon Yellow, of a Pokemon following you around.
Right.
But that didn't really have a lot of use. It sounds like this is just kind of taking it to another level where it is sort of useful.
Right, you're actually riding the Pokemon with you. They gave lots of details about the fairy type. They discussed why they added it, stuff like that. It's... there's a lot of interesting details. We have like four straight articles covering the news out of that on the site.
It is going to be, I think the obviously this was largely announced, you know, at the direct some months ago, but the fact that it's going to be a worldwide simultaneous release is going to be weird. Not having that big like 6 month lead in where it's been out in Japan, it's already sold however many millions of copies, and everything's kind of already known about it by the real Pokemon diehards online.
Right, and to them, this is the biggest worldwide release they've ever done, because every cartridge they sell around the world will have all seven languages on it. And that's seven, unlike their normal five, because they've included, I believe they included Russian and Korean. For the first time, they're going to simultaneously launch a game in Korea ever, I believe.
Yeah, because a lot of the Korean stuff is way behind, isn't it? Like the other games. So it's really ambitious. But I mean, they do have like a whole other, you know, the Pokemon company to handle the licensing and stuff, so I guess they feel they can manage it. But it will kind of add to the sense of occasion. I think it's a big deal, the first real Pokemon on 3DS, and it's doubtlessly going to spike the sales. And
It's going to make that one quarter they released that game look really, really good.
Yeah, but the fact that it is going to be simultaneous worldwide in October, no, normally it's been in April or March or that kind of time, so it was kind of out on it around the end of the fiscal
year. It was usually tied, near as I can tell, to the springtime off in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not happening this time. It's tied to the holiday season, which might make it even more nuts.
No, it's going to be a really big deal. That's kind of the point, really. It's such a big deal. I don't know whether you need a round table or a bit in the video to handle it.
I think the round table was good because the developers were able to sort of show all the things they're doing that changes the Pokemon franchise. I mean, they seem to be much more ambitious with this than even they were in Black and White.
I mean, like visually, and the battles, the battles are visualized and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it seems like a major upgrade.
It's night and day.
The movement stuff. I mean, it's true. I mean, you do need a certain amount of outreach to say, because there's a natural assumption for perfectly justifiable reasons that's probably prevalent out there that it's just the same game every time. You know, you do need to let people know that some of the advancements that are being made.
I think obviously, I mean, that's really the only 3DS game they talked about. Mm. I mean, and that seems somewhat strange, but
in terms of stuff that's playable, you had Yoshi's Island, you had Zelda, you know, the Mario & Luigi, which is fairly imminent now, that's next month. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, of course you had those, but I guess they did feel like they had to talk about those, especially just because the 3DS in general is doing rather well. Even in Europe now, its market share is increasing quite rapidly. All of a sudden it's become quite a common occurrence to see the 3DS games in the top 10 in Britain, which has not been true until now. I mean, it seems like it's really bracing for takeoff, and that's even before Pokemon arrives.
Oh my god.
Things are going well on that front. But I have to bring up one thing that was not featured at all, which I found a little curious, considering you'd think, as I kind of alluded to earlier, they'd just throw every Wii U thing they possibly could at the wall, which is the Yoshi Yarn game, whatever it's going to be called.
That's true. The Yarn, whatever that thing is called.
That was announced, originally in the January direct, I believe.
Yes, and so, it was announced with X and the Luigi, the add-on to
New Super Luigi U. Yeah, and I mean, it seems odd to me that you've have a game that they've already teased once and 6 months later, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, that's not worth talking about, even when, you know, it seems like they want to put absolutely everything out there related to Wii U to give people confidence that the system is going to have games. But of course, it is another side-scrolling platformer.
Yeah, so keep in mind that we mentioned two side-scrolling platformers, the Donkey Kong one and, to an extent, the Mario 3D World.
And but then this new Super Luigi U itself, which we just talked about, is just a major piece of DLC. They are selling it in a box as well. So, I mean, would it have just seemed a bit too one-note if you put Yoshi's Yarn, or whatever it's going to be called, in there as well? But it feels like it's kind of got the short end of the stick. You know, it got announced first, and then DKC has kind of usurped it, essentially.
I think DKC is just much more imminent.
Yeah.
I think ultimately what's probably happened is Yoshi, whatever, hasn't really progressed that much. Because they are showing, obviously, Yoshi's New Island, which is a word simply cannot be allowed to use anymore.
That is not a very nice title. But furthermore, it's come to light that game, Yoshi's New Island, is being developed by R-Toon's reanimated corpse.
The reanimated corpse of R-Toon and Sega Outcasts.
Yes.
That's a rough
It's sort category. Of R-Toon's corpse, but they've sort of appropriated some limbs from a Sega
from
cadaver.
Another rather unsavory developer.
And whatnot. I mean, and now, R-Toon, of course, made Yoshi's Island DS. Right. Which I do not have the same level of disdain for that some people do. I don't think it's bad. But certainly, it does have the feel, this is something a lot of people say, of kind of like a ROM hack, you know, like a fan game. You know, it just lacks that bit of authenticity, that authentic spark of creativity that the original Yoshi's Island had. You know, it just adds stuff. You know, it added the second screen. Right. Sort of, yeah, so you played across two screens. It added the different children that had different powers or could collect different things. But yeah, it was just like purely kind of adding things like the checkbox kind of thing. It didn't really add to the real flavour of the game. It was a bit by the numbers and all that kind of stuff. And of course, before that, they made Yoshi's Universal Gravitation or Yoshi's Topsy Turvy, wherever you are in the world, was the thing where you put, it was a gyro sensor in the cartridge for the GBA. They made that. And they made Fling Smash, of course.
God.
Blinks the Time Sweeper before that or something. So they don't have a great track record. Like I said, Yoshi's Island DS is not, I think, a bad game, but it's not really who I would choose. Certainly to make another one. It's like you kind of proved the limitations of what you could do with Yoshi's Island once. I'm not sure about you doing it again. And it has this kind of incongruous art style where it's very much looks like Yoshi's Island on Super Nintendo in some ways, but then it brings in this sort of painting kind of angle, you know, a bit like that one area in New Super Mario Brothers U, you know, the kind of oil painting style. And then it's got some polygonal characters and things that kind of make it look like Yoshi's Story. It's this really weird melange of Yoshi related aesthetics that doesn't quite come together for me, at least not yet. And of course, I'm not seeing it in 3D and all that kind of stuff, right. Small screen, so it could well be different when you get to see it for yourself. But I'm not all that optimistic about how well that's going to turn out. So Yoshi's Yarn, being developed by Goodfeel, or if I have a very good track record with Wario Land Shake It and Kirby's Epic Yarn, and then also we've been assured that Tezuka, the famous Mario producer and also, of course, worked on Yoshi's Island, is going to be sort of quite involved in that as well. I feel that has the better pedigree and the more coherent visual style. So that's the game I wanted to hear more about, and it probably, I can only assume, a bit like Mario Golf has been bumped. You know, the Mario Golf on 3DS is nowhere to be seen at the show, and now we find out that it's been bumped into next year. I think that may well be the case for Yoshi as well.
Yep. I mean, so I think we've covered pretty much everything. So just to get your feeling, I mean, we've discussed individual elements. We've kind of given the general overview. To you, what was the most, what were you most excited about coming out of, I mean, obviously you probably caught the news in a somewhat different fashion than I did, but how...
Yeah, it was a few hours later. I did my best to kind of stumble to a feed without spoiling everything.
Okay,
but I wasn't expecting there to be a lot of stuff to spoil, so I wasn't dreadfully frightened of that.
So, to you, coming away from it, what... And this doesn't have to be necessarily a positive thing, but what were you most surprised about?
Well, like I said, there weren't a lot of surprises. I mean, definitely, I think... one thing that kind of interested me actually was personal level so much, but on a business level, Wii Party and Wii Fit getting delayed to the end of the year. That is basically Nintendo doing to themselves what Ubisoft did with Rayman Legends and what they're doing with the Deus Ex Special Edition and all that kind of stuff. It's basically like these games are not going to sell the system. So if we put them out now, they're just going to sell below their potential, like New Super Mario Brothers is doing. because, you know, they will sell well if people own the system, but they're not going to actually sell people on the system itself. So we're going to delay it until later in the year, where maybe some of the other games have persuaded people to buy them, and, then they can actually sell closer to their potential. I don't buy for a minute this whole angle of, like, oh, we've had to delay Wii Party U because we've had some great crisis about how, you know, it's not creative enough yet or something. I don't believe that. I really
don't.
Well,
and it's playable, I believe. I believe you can play on the floor right now.
I hadn't seen anything about it being playable on the floor, but I just think those sorts of games, you know, if they wanted them to be out by now, I think they would be. They probably feel like in this current climate, you know, if they'd come out in the spring and summer when they originally intended to come out, all that would have happened is they passed without a trace, and then, you know, if the fortunes of the system do turn around, you kind of wasted them in this time where they weren't going to sell very much. So, I mean, for all the people that might have sort badmouthed Ubisoft for doing that with Rayman Legends, well, Nintendo just
did it to themselves.
They did it to themselves with that thing. But and that's something we should say, kind of as a disclaimer or preface. I mean, with E3, I've seen the analogy made. It's a bit like the draft in the NFL. You know, you could get like into, you know, who are the winners and losers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But how much it actually translates into fact down the line is another matter entirely. I mean, people were tepid on Nintendo showing last year, but if you had said to them, oh, and by the way, by the time next year's E3 comes around, Game & Wario, Wii Fit, Wonderful 101, and Pikmin 3, none of those will even be out yet. People would have thought, well, what catastrophe caused all of global commerce
the world
to
end.
Screech to a halt? You know, I mean, that would have been so shocking. So even something that was kind of tepid, actually, they vastly underperformed that in reality. So, I mean, that could go the other way as well. You know, you can overperform things.
And with this relatively open format they have to announcing things, there's nothing to say that they couldn't just announce something next month that is coming out in, like, early January.
No, I mean, that's the thing. The way the directs work now, you've kind of got more information to go on with these things. I don't think there are going to be so many surprises at E3 unless they kind of change their approach. You know, there's more tea leaves to read, as it were, now. But at the same time, yes, they could come back and announce things like fairly soon after as well. That's the other side of it. But for me, I see, it wasn't like some great bombshell, yeah, because it didn't have the really, like, the most fun you get at E3 is when you get stuff that's completely out of the blue. But, and you didn't really get that. In terms of what's the most fun when you're playing it with the gamepad in your hands, it's got to be Mario 3D World. That's for me, I think that I wanted a sequel to that game. I'm getting a sequel to that game. I'm really confident it's going to deliver. That's what I'm most excited about coming out of it.
Yeah, so for me, what I found most surprising was the complete absence. I mean, almost total and utter absence of third-party discussion during Nintendo's Nintendo
Direct.
Well,
funny enough, they kind of already got a bit of that out of the way with, I mean, Sonic is what they had for third-party.
And they blew that.
And they already got that out of the way. That was like something they just did, that's exposition that was a bit too crunchy for the main event.
It was kind of a strange feel. I mean, they had 3DS games that they could have shown, but they didn't talk about them. I mean, it was a very weird vibe all around.
No, I mean, unfortunately, the third-party situation is very bleak. I mean, you have a certain number of multi-platform games that are actually coming to Wii U that could well be good. And, I mean, certainly with my experience, players are like Darksiders 2... make apart from the fact hard locked a lot, which I know you can relate to.
Oh my god!
The off TV play for me, it really helps me get through a game in a timely fashion. So I would be quite interested in playing stuff like Batman or Splinter Cell or some of these other Watch Dogs that are actually coming to Wii U. And there are some of them. It looks like Call of Duty Ghosts will
Call
be
of Duty
one of those.
Ghost is coming.
They're
to Wii U,
still kind of being coy about it for some reason, but it looks like it is going to happen. But you know, you take all those, like, yeah, there's some, but I think the problem is going to be that as we transition to the PS4 and Xbox One, though, and especially with this bad first year that Wii U's had, even those are probably going to dry up pretty soon.
Right. And that obviously is a troubling place to find your console in, because you can't rely on the fact that people are making 360 versions of your game to get you a certain number of requisite sales, or get you the best chance of getting a console. The barrier to entry for a third party to port their game to your system becomes much higher.
And I mean, I think what you're going to see is that the notable third party titles on Wii U are going to be ones where Nintendo sort of solicits the support of Japanese developers.
Right. I mean, the Platinum.
Platinum, we've already seen Wonderful 101 and Bayonetta. This deal with Sega, with Sonic for Lost World, right, which, looks quite promising. I mean, I like Colors. I think that could be a good thing. You could definitely expect more stuff with Tecmo Koei after the Fatal Frame deal. They own that now, all that kind of stuff. So it's almost not third party, but, those sorts of things, palling up with Japanese developers. Although that would be easier if the Wii U does better in Japan, which may be a tall order considering just how dominant the portable market is there. It could be quite an uphill climb to get the Wii U going over there. But still, those are probably the big third-party title games that we're going to get, and there probably aren't going to be that many of those because that's a bit too much money for Nintendo to be throwing around. And all sorts, all and sundry. It probably will be a select few Japanese companies that they've had prior relationships with.
Right. I mean, I expect this, obviously we talked about Good Feel, we'll probably continue to see games coming out of them. Remember, they're not technically second party. I mean, they're
kind of like Monster Games and some of the other people that they just keep working with. But I think it's really kind of what you're seeing with Sonic. I think that's what they're going to have to do with Namco. I mean, they're making Smash Brothers with Namco, so they've got a relationship there. These Japanese developers, maybe they could reach out to a Western dev to do some of this stuff as well, so it's not too samey, think out of the box a little bit. But yeah, it's just, you can't see how third, I mean, there's always a kind of an issue with third party support on Nintendo consoles, or there certainly has been since the N64. There's just this expectation, this equilibrium position, that even if the system's big, like the Wii was, or like the DS has been, or that some, especially Western companies, don't really seem confident that their products are going to thrive in a Nintendo ecosystem, if you like. And with the bad start that the Wii U's got off to, I can't see why that equilibrium is going to change. I mean, it's pretty rock steady at this point, unfortunately. I mean, with 3DS, I mean, obviously it gets good third-party support from Japan, where it's massive, but what's the big support coming from Western?
Nothing.
That's a big success at this point. I mean, so I don't think they have much faith that they could do well in Nintendo platforms. So they don't do well in those platforms, and their expectations are confirmed, and so it goes on. I mean, you could try and blame one side or the other, or whatever. I don't really think it matters. It just is an equilibrium position, and nothing at E3 came even in the same universe as something that could upset that balance.
Right. No, nothing was going to change the perception on that front, because nothing happened that had any reason to. Ultimately, we saw what we expected to see from pretty much all parties involved, and that's what we saw. We didn't see anything that was markedly surprising. Nobody came out there and said, hey, we've got a Wii U game you're not going to expect coming, because ultimately, I don't think anybody does have that. I mean, Sega.
Well, the Sonic thing, they had that, which they decided to announce that beforehand. But again, I mean, that's the thing. If they'd had some significant partnership with somebody to offer, you probably would have heard about it already, because they have been scrambling for just good news to put out there about the Wii U, because all the narrative in the gaming media has been so overwhelmingly negative for the past few months.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, for me, is I don't want to talk, I want to try to keep positive, because in general the news has been relatively bleak, and not necessarily out of place bleak, and not necessarily, that's the best way of putting it. In many cases, the news has been bleak, and sometimes deserved, and sometimes not as deserved as it has been, if that makes sense. In some cases, it's overreactionary. But to me, I just, you know, ultimately at E3, I want to see games, and I think we have to sort of adjust ourselves to this reality that we're not going to see a bunch of games at E3. We're going to see them, but we're not going to see a bunch of new things. I'm somewhat concerned with the relative disregard they're treating with the 3DS, but...
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, there's only so much sort of, you know, PR oxygen, and they want to give it all for the Wii U, and that's their decision. I mean, obviously, it is in so much more of a state, you know, I can understand that instinct. But at the same time, you would like to see, you know, some of these 3DS titles get publicity because, you know, Mario & Luigi, the Bowser's Inside Story, and the original Mario & Luigi, some of my favorite portable games. I mean, I think that deserves a lot of attention, the new one.
I mean, the last 3DS game I feel like they really went all out on was probably Fire Emblem. They didn't really go all out on Luigi's Mansion. Although, I mean, it is in and of itself a good game.
I think the trouble with Luigi's Mansion is it's been in the works for so long. I don't know whether they felt there was a kind of fatigue problem if they kind of over-publicized it. You know, they got announced so long ago. But, no, I mean, it is doing well, so I can understand the urge to kind of try and do what they can to prop up the Wii U. But the problem is they've already been doing that. So I just think there was never going to be some ace in the hole that they could pull out that was going to be a total game changer. And that's for me, there's two very different things. For me personally, I already own a Wii U, so, you know, I don't give a shit whether a game sells other people on the system because I've already bought it. Like, I just want games that are going to be fun to play. And 3D World, DKC, ideally they'd be a bit more different maybe, but I've got every confidence that I'm going to enjoy those games a great deal. So from that point of view, I'm quite satisfied. But in terms of the idea of finding something that's a system seller, I'm not really sure. And Nintendo would point to the fact that the 3DS turned around on the basis of 6-month period where it got a Zelda remake, a 3D Mario, and a Mario Kart. Which is probably exactly what we're going to see. We're going to have Wind Waker.
We're going to get Wind Waker
in October. We're going to get 3D World in December or whatever it is, and then probably Mario Kart in the spring. You know, March, April, roughly 6-month period. There's a few things about that. I mean, first of all, the fact is that, you know, those were the games that kind of sold people on 3DS. So if they've bought a 3DS and they've got those games, how eager are they to buy another system to buy, you know, fundamentally very similar games? That's the problem. I mean, they have the proven pedigree of being kind of system sellers, but can they sell another system? That's almost an entirely different test. In that sense, the Wii U could become a victim of the 3DS success because, you know, if people are satisfied, you know, people who are naturally inclined to buy Nintendo consoles are satisfied with how robust the 3DS lineup is and how much of a kind of console quality experience some of these games are offering, they might need something more than just, you know, sort of glossier versions of the games that sold them on the 3DS to actually invest in a new console. And then furthermore, the thing that the 3DS also had was a very significant price cut, which of course was something that you may well have been expecting going into this that did not happen at the show. But I have to think that's still on the table for before the holidays.
They have to cut the price.
It's still very much an option. Of course, you know, one of the things that Nintendo wouldn't have known coming into this is what were Sony and Microsoft going to pitch their consoles at. Now we know that Sony have gone quite low with theirs. You know, it's perhaps uncomfortably close to the premium SKU price at the moment for the Wii U. Then that might influence them in cutting the price, especially because for the first time in years, the currency situation is actually favourable. You know, the yen's been weakening, so they can actually got more latitude to cut prices in the other markets outside of Japan. I think that may well be coming, but it wasn't. Again, that could have been seen as a game changer type announcement. Again, because it did help on the 3DS, but that may come later. I'm not going to, just because it wasn't in this presentation, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Right. So, I think that will probably do it for us here. Greg, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I think I got to most everything, including I had to get my Yoshi stuff in there. But I would say my biggest unanswered question of the whole show really was just that, okay, you showed the two Smash Brothers games, but the real question is how do they interact?
Right.
Because, Smash Brothers is, I think that the defining feature of Smash Brothers is arguably the greatest single-screen multiplayer game Nintendo's ever made. There's no split screen. It's perfect for gathering around one TV with four friends, and it's a riot. So why do I want a portable version where we've all got our own private screens? You've got. I mean, it's nice for people that own a 3DS and don't own a Wii U, of course. But in terms of really, if I'm going to possibly think about getting both, there have to be some sort of interactivity, whether it be some like a bit like the old Mario Golf tennis stuff that Camelot used to make, where it was kind of single player focused on the handheld, and then you could transfer your character to play on the N64, the GameCube version in the multiplayer focused title. So could be something like that, but they haven't answered that at all. So I mean, for now, especially as I already do have a Wii U again, it's the console version all the way. I have to be persuaded on the portable version, right. And they've said nothing about that. So that's the big outstanding issue for me.
In fact, they said very little about the portable version at all. I mean, everything they showed except for some pre-rendered stuff was the Wii U version. And I think we're really in wait and see mode on what the 3DS version ends up looking like.
Yeah.
And what it ends up being. So that will do it for us, but don't go anywhere, because unlike the rest of us, John Lindemann couldn't get here in time, so he'll be doing a segment with me after the break. He's already warned me on Twitter that it's a good thing he's had a day to decompress, so God help us.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah, this could be very unpleasant for everyone involved. In fact, he's already troll tweeted me about it about four times, so we're
better deliver now, to be honest.
We're probably in for something. Expect lots of screaming and probably where we're the first person shooters. So, Greg, thank you for being on.
Thank
Pleasure
you
to talk
for
to
having
you again.
Me. Very nice to chat with you, James.
And of course, you're always welcome anytime. You can manage it.
Thank you.
All right, so stay tuned. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
This week on NintendoWorldReport.com, we have our coverage of the Electronic Entertainment Expo. The away team's been writing the impressions, and the home team's been doing lots of work getting all the news, get those impressions edited, uploading media, images, video, you name it. And it's so much work. It's so much work. I mean, every time I turn around, there's more impressions to edit, and there's just media files stacking up everywhere, and I'm sorry, I'm just tired. I'm so tired. I'm just gonna lay down and I'm not gonna go to sleep. I just need a minute. Oh, just give me a second. So we're back, and as I promised before leaving, now I have with me Mr. John Lindemann.
Indeed, James, it's a pleasure to be here without the dead weight, so to speak.
Without the dead weight, yeah. The two people who don't do anything on this podcast.
Yeah, you know, it's like you get to actually hear my voice a bit. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it'll be nice.
Nice for a change. I think it might freak some people out, but it's all good. It's all good. We're here to talk to Nintendo.
Who's this guy?
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to talk to Nintendo. So we've already covered all the news that happened in Greg's segment.
Yeah.
It was somewhat perfunctory, since I'm sure everybody listening to this already knew it anyway, but whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go right in. John, first impressions, go.
My first impression, I have to say my first impression was, wow, that was it. At the end of the Nintendo Direct, I mean, you know, Iwata did his booth tour kind of thing, and I was assuming that he would come back in and, you know, they would announce some more games and, you know, it would go on for another 15 minutes and they would drop some megatons. And then that was it. He was like, well, yeah, that's it. Thank you for watching. And I looked back. I flipped back because I was watching it at work, so I flipped back. Or not watching it, hiding it, actually. But I flipped back, and there's the Nintendo Direct, the image sitting there like it had ended. And I was like, wow, that's it. That's really all they actually showed. So, yeah, I mean, I was definitely – disappointed by it, for sure. Just because a lot of the games that I was really waiting for were pushed off to 2014. Yes. A lot of the titles that, you know, like Mario Kart 8 is a game that I've long said would be the title that I would buy a Wii U for. That's pushed out to spring 2014. Project X is 2014, even though that's not surprising.
No.
Smash being 2014. Smash Brothers is not, really not surprising. But Mario Kart 8, I was honestly, that really surprised me that it was not coming out this year.
Me too.
Especially after seeing the impressions from the show floor today, where they aren't redesigning the game from the ground up.
No.
It just takes the concept and pretty much extends it, throws in some wrinkles. You know, you can go upside down and stuff like that. But, I mean, for that to take so long to develop, it just makes me wonder how long they've actually had it in development, which makes me wonder what the heck they were thinking.
It's a pretty – I mean, I saw it in person today. It's a pretty obvious evolution of Mario Kart 7 and Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
And Greg actually referred to it as a hybridization of the two. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually a pretty accurate statement for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it brings back the transforming vehicles. It brings back the underwater stuff. It brings back the bikes from Mario Kart Wii. Mm-hmm. It's got the big 12-racer thing going on. But it's in no way, you know, groundbreaking. I don't see that this game has the gimmick that all the Mario Kart games have. Yeah. I don't know what that is yet.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't know what it is either. Maybe that's why it's 2014. Maybe they're still toying with stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it would seem that, you know, I mean, have they said anything about exactly what anything unique that you're going to do with the gamepad?
So, I watched somebody play it today, and there wasn't much going on. But I don't know if they've said anything unique about it. No.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the problems too that many people have said about the games that they announced. I mean, at this point, the gamepad is supposed to be the kind of the hook with all of these games, but it's really not being used for anything that unique.
Yeah, I mean, so we actually got an email about this, and I'll spare the reading because I'm sure the others will want to read it. And, of course, we'll have already answered it. But the question I got was, or we as RFN got, was essentially asking, why would we bother with, you know, spending all this extra money on the gamepad if they're not going to show it when they could just put that money into the hardware?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a valid question in lieu of what we've seen, or excuse me, in light of what we've seen today.
Yeah.
But there's a good answer to why you would do it, which is that just putting this into a sheer numbers war has never been a winning formula for Nintendo.
Just true. Very true.
And on the GameCube, that was certainly a more competent piece of hardware than the PS2 was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a damn sight easier to program for.
Yeah.
But it didn't get the games.
Yeah.
And the GameCube, I mean, the GameCube wasn't doing great, but it was somewhat comparable to what the Xbox was pulling.
Mm-hmm.
And the Xbox was getting games.
Yeah.
So Nintendo, I can understand the reticence to just say, okay, well, we'll just make a big numbers machine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately the execution of the gamepad is really good. The only time it ever gives me any grief is when I have my work phone. God forbid,
mm-hmm.
because for whatever reason, Blackberries and the Wii gamepad don't get along.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's technically really impressive. And in the games where you can play off screen, yeah, it's actually much more useful than I expected.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
God,
the stuff
I need a game.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, everything I've seen of it, I mean, I was really impressed by watching somebody play Black Ops 2 on it, and I was like, wow, that's awesome. But Nintendo really doesn't hype it up very much.
No.
And none of the games really seem none of the games have the gamepad as the central hook. So it kind of leaves people in this sort of gray area where it's like, okay, well, if you're charging me more money for this fancy new controller, but you're really not using it, what's the deal with that? What's my money actually – where's the value in that? That's the thing. Nintendo has a very hard time communicating the value of the gamepad. And, I mean, that's a completely – that's a very valid concern with people.
I wonder if – if they either regarded it as somewhat self-evident early on, like they just said, well, the value of the gamepad is painfully apparent if you've got two eyes in your face.
Yeah.
And they underestimated the importance of emphasizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the converse side, if they themselves believe it's a good utility to have, but still haven't come up with the idea that they think really makes it shine as the central figure of a game.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I look at something like Kinect, and when Kinect first came out, I thought that was the silliest thing on the planet. but it shows you.
It was. It was.
And it actually remains the silliest thing on the planet. But
it's still really silly.
But it shows you the power of being able to visually demonstrate what something does for people. Right?
Right.
I mean, people can grasp that. Kinect, just like the Wii remote, people can grasp that. Oh, well, in this game where I bowl, I just pick up the controller and I move it like I would be throwing a ball down the lane. People get that. That's easy to sell to people. And it's easy to kind of use that as a gateway. Like, oh, well, if you can do that with just a simple sports game, just think what you can do with this or that. Same thing with Kinect. People see, you know, people move their hand in the magical Kinect force field and they see them move on screen the same way. And that's really easy to sell. But with the gamepad, I think it's very hard for Nintendo to break that barrier of it just looking like an oversized controller.
Right.
And they aren't helping that at all either. They aren't helping that perception.
No. And they've got two problems with it. One is that if they want to show what's going on the gamepad, they almost invariably can't show what's going on the screen.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to show with the – so I'm going to take this on the Wayback Machine to about 2009. Nintendo at E3 2009, they might have still been doing it 2010. I know they were doing it before 2009, had a really strange rule, which is when you wanted to film games off screen, the person playing the game had to be in the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant they had to be able to see what you're doing with your hands and stuff. And the reason was they wanted to show how the motion controls sort of coalesced in the gameplay.
Yeah.
That went away when they went through that run of 2D platformers where the motion controls really were more or less immaterial. But what was interesting is that if you wanted to do that for the gamepad, you really couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You can't shoot what's going on. I mean, if you shoot the person's hands, you're just going to see kind of a blurry mash of color and then playing it like any other game.
Yeah.
Occasionally tapping into this mass. If you want to really give context to how the game is being played, assuming a game really uses this configuration, you really can only show that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not visually appealing to someone trying to learn about a game. It's not – seeing someone's hands flail about across a touchscreen isn't really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like – I mean, it's very hard to communicate exactly what the person is doing or what kind of value that brings to the gameplay.
Right.
Without some sort of, you know, sweeping broad gesture across the screen or something that is exactly replicated on screen, right? It's
right.
Like no one's going to buy a console on the strength of being able to bring up a map on the gamepad as opposed to just having it in a HUD on the screen.
Right. And in games that do that, they can be – I mean, it's super useful. Once I figured out how the fucking map worked in Darksiders 2, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was super useful,
yeah.
But in the interim, it was a god-awful garbage town. But it was nice to be able to have the map off the screen and down where I can look at it,
mm-hmm.
because you can see much more detail. But that's not a selling feature.
Yeah.
The implementation of the touchscreen in Darksiders 2 is relatively small time,
yeah.
for lack of a better word. Like, I mean, they did some stuff that was cool, there's no doubt. But ultimately, they didn't do anything to sell the system or the game. It just did stuff that was logical, where if they didn't do it, you'd be like, well, why didn't you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like a lot of, I mean, based on the impressions we've got on the site, NintendoReport.com, it sounds like a lot of the touchscreen usage falls into that category, where they did do it, and it's good that they did it, but ultimately they just did what you would expect to be the bare minimum.
Yeah, it's helpful, but not really crucial to gameplay.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that you, I mean, needs to happen, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
You can't – it doesn't make any sense for it not to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so disappointed, you know, it's good to see some of the games that are coming out. I mean, you have, you know, 3D World surprised me. It's very cool. I think that looks really neat. But again, it's a Mario platformer that I look at it and I say, you know, it looks really cool, but it's not enough to get me to buy the console. You know, it looks like, again, it's sort of, an offshoot. And that's the thing I actually really like. I really like Super Mario 3D Land. Love that game. But
right.
It's kind of more of that same experience, which I liked,
yep.
on the console. So it's kind of like, yeah, that's cool, but kind of a shrug of the shoulder sort of thing. It's like, you know, it's not going to get me to buy it.
Yeah, what I mentioned earlier in the show is that playing that with four players, which I did today,
mm-hmm.
it's super chaotic,
mm-hmm.
and it's got that real chaos vibe from New Super Mario Brothers. But Super Mario 3D Land is a much more deliberate game in a lot of ways than New Super Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a weird dichotomy when you're playing it with four people.
Yeah,
And ultimately, the person who is being the most aggressive and going forward dictates the pace of everybody else. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to sort of drive that in a way that makes it the same depth of exploration. If you play it single player, obviously you can go at your own pace. It's a weird hybridization of two game concepts that have sort of existed independently. One of the make the more streamlined 3D platformer game that is New Super Mario, when it is 3D Land, and then make the four-player mayhem fest that Super Mario, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, mm-hmm. and sort of try to cross-pollinate them into one entity.
Yeah,
I'll be curious. I mean, obviously the demo only has a couple levels in it. I'll be curious to see what it looks like in full.
Yeah,
as a concept of execution. I mean, I'll probably play that game single player ultimately, but I mean, I'll have a chance to do multiplayer. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious if it's going to be a rewarding experience.
Yeah. So is it all taken from that kind of isometric view?
What I saw was.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, what I saw visually and gameplay wise, any of those levels would have been perfectly acceptable in New Super Mario. I mean, damn it, in 3D Land.
Yeah.
And the only thing different really is the graphics and the fact there are four people running around.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, it's not really a new experience. Right?
No, not really.
That's one of the things. That's one of the problems. I mean, the only truly new game, I think, of the ones that they kind of showed was a Wonderful 101. You know, and that's yes. and that's already also that's already a known quantity.
Right.
Right.
And actually, that game does make relatively extensive use of the touchscreen.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to draw your weapons, and they show up on screen. So to an extent, that game does do it some. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they show it so much, or maybe they're just really proud of it. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be a fun game, and it features the isometric gameplay they've talked about in the past.
Yep.
I'm just, I don't know that that's going to be a big game for them.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a lot of this stuff. I mean, Wind Waker HD. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of this stuff is like, yeah, that's cool, but Wind Waker HD. That's a great game, but from what I saw and from what I've heard, it doesn't look too different from the GameCube version. I mean.
It's visual styles almost a dead ringer.
Yeah, and I mean, I know there's the functionality. There's it integrates with Miiverse. I think you can put a message mm-hmm. in a bottle and you can pick it up in somebody else's
in your Tingle bottle.
Yeah, and that's cool.
It's an awful name. It's an awful
the Tingle
name.
Bottle. Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. But I mean, there's Wii Party U coming out. That's
right.
It's cool. All this stuff is cool. You know. DK Tropical Freeze, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't think there's any duds in this lineup.
No, absolutely not.
I think every game in this lineup, if it were the number two game, like at the E3 press conference, I think you'd be fine with
that's it. That's exactly how I feel.
Every game to give this a sort of vibe of what's going on right now, every single game that they discussed is Chris Bosh.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's the best way I can describe it.
Yep.
They had like six Chris Boshes.
Yep. I totally agree.
And I think, and Greg brought up a good point discussing the 3D world versus Galaxy dichotomy, and that Galaxy is such a showier game mm-hmm. that it's going to be hard for 3D world to sort of live up to the sort of, visual overriding factors that come into an E3 press conference, the wow factor of it all.
Yep. Yep, and which exists. I mean, even exists on a Nintendo Direct. People want to be wowed. They want to come away.
So, do you think if they had, let's say they didn't do this as a Nintendo Direct. Let's say they had rented out Nokia Theater like they normally do. They had brought these people out on stage as opposed to having them stand in front of a green screen in Kyoto and faking a set behind them. They had showed a couple minutes of Bill Trennan playing with the producer and Trennan trying really hard not to beat them. And that they had done that instead. And do you think we would have felt more wowed by it if they put all the pomp into it they normally do?
I think with the lineup that they have, that they had to show, no.
Right.
I don't think it would have done the – I think they did the right thing by doing the Nintendo Direct, given what they had to show.
I can see that. I think the only way they could have done it – the only way that they could have really been able to really have their LeBron James moment is if Smash Brothers was a lot further along.
Exactly. That's the kind of thing where if they had something to show,
And they showed the game being played. I mean, people mm-hmm. have seen it. I mean, they demoed it, I believe, yep. at their booth later in the day. Mm-hmm. But if they had had, you know, if that game were further along, that game were 2013, maybe even early 2014, and could say, this game will be definitely out before next E3. Mm-hmm. Definitively will be out. And we're going to show it right now. And they had more than just a couple characters fighting in a pre-rendered screen.
Yeah.
I think that could have been enough to push them into Club Nokia.
Yep.
But
I agree.
I think in its state, and it was, I mean, you could tell even they think that's their LeBron because they held it for the very end.
Yeah.
It was the last thing they showed. And the Mega Man reveal was really cool. I mean, that Sakurai, if he can do anything, he can produce a damn video.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wii Fit personal trainer was fucking mental.
Yep.
Again, masterfully produced video. Mm-hmm. But they would have had to have sort of found a way to capture that same level of just hype.
Yeah.
But in a gameplay presentation. And I don't know that the game is far enough along you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There was very little surprise. You know, that's why I was waiting. I mean, when it ended, I was like, okay, now they're going to get to the stuff that's going to blow my mind.
Right.
Oh, wait, it's done. Oh, my God, what just happened?
I wouldn't even say they telegraphed their moves. I would say they explicitly gave us an itinerary.
Yeah.
Which is what we predicted, you know, 2 weeks ago. We said they're going to tell us – they've told us exactly what they're going to show.
Yeah.
And then we went and predicted shit anyway because we're idiots.
Yeah.
And at the time, we said we are idiots. And sure enough, we were, in fact, idiots.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations, Nintendo, for making a prophecy true.
Yeah. I mean, it was disappointing for me just to see how many things got pushed into 2014. I mean, when Nintendo themselves have said, you know, hey, you know, we understand Wii U isn't doing very well and that it needs more games. And so it's very obvious that they need more games, and they turn around and they push out four of their biggest titles, you know, arguably. They push them right out into 2014.
So Smash Brothers,
Mario Kart 8, Project X,
Project X, and Art Studio?
Yeah. And
and why is that game not already out? Yeah. They showed concept. They showed, like, a faked concept of that game at E3 2010.
Yeah. And, I mean, they really didn't even show – they didn't really have many third-party games either.
No. So. But they had a sizzle reel, a quick sizzle reel.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I want to see how Watch Dogs plays on Wii U.
Yeah.
It should play differently. It should – I mean, it's about a game where a guy has a touchscreen cell phone and fucks up what appears to be, like, neo-steampunk Montreal.
Yeah, and I mean, since then we found out that Ghost is coming to Wii U. Why Nintendo didn't announce that, I have absolutely no idea.
The only thing I can think of is EA hadn't cleared them to announce it.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Which could be totally an EA move.
Yeah, well, Activision.
Oh, it should be Activision. Yeah, it'd be an Activision move.
And I mean, when they were asked about that, they said, well, we wanted to keep it mysterious. How is that benefiting anybody?
It's called Ghost, John.
Yeah, meanwhile, it's called Ghost. You know, meanwhile, on every other platform, they set aside like 2 hours to announce the game on a Sunday night all to themselves.
Right.
But they want to keep it mysterious, though. So apparently they don't want to keep it mysterious for PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, and Xbox One. But Wii U, they want to keep it mysterious. So I didn't really understand that.
They'll keep it very mysterious of how much you'll have to pay to play a used copy on Xbox One.
Yeah.
Boom.
That's another thing. Speaking of that, I mean, Nintendo kind of, you know, they could have brought that out, you know.
Yeah, they could have.
But they didn't mention that at all. They didn't say anything about used games. They didn't say anything about backwards compatibility. I mean, you would think that versus Xbox One and PS4, neither one of those are backwards compatible.
Nope.
So, and the Wii U is. But I can pretty much guarantee you that most people don't even realize that. They just have absolutely no idea. And the people that need to know that actually – those kind of casual gamers, families, and stuff like that, that bought a Wii U and enjoyed it and probably would like to upgrade to Wii U, they don't even realize that it's backwards compatible.
Right. All your games will play.
Yeah.
Or either that, or they think it is implicitly. They just assume.
Yeah. So.
It was a weird, I keep trying to use the phrase press conference, but it really was. I mean, they had one, but it was a real press conference. It's kind of, I read one critique of what they did, and I can't remember who wrote it, but the argument was that Nintendo conducted the first E3 press conference by a platform holder in like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a segment where they actually got out and talked to the press.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the big show. And that may be the case, but we use the term press conference because that's the term we've adapted for this particular usage. I do wonder, though, ultimately, it was the motivating factor for doing this that they didn't have stuff to show, and does that mean we'll see it again? Or did they, or do they just like this controlled release of information? I mean, is this the future for them?
Because yeah.
If they keep the Nintendo Directs going like they do, and they're pretty regular at this point, mm-hmm. It's really going to be impossible for them to have stuff to really blow your mind with the E3, because
yeah.
If they, at the current rate they have Nintendo Directs, they can't produce enough games to have these, plus have, you know, 5-6 unknown games at E3.
Yeah, I mean, I think it worked. I was thinking about this, and I feel like it actually, especially for E3, I think it works against them. I mean, I was thinking about, a Link, what is it, Link to Two Worlds? Or Link...
Link Between Worlds.
The fact that that was already announced, why announce that prior to E3?
Well, because they didn't talk about it.
True, yeah. I mean, I guess it was focused on Wii U, but that strategy in itself, I mean...
It ghettoizes the 3DS.
Well, that's the thing, right? Okay, it's great.
And that's entirely the right word for it. Yeah. I mean, they ghettoize the 3DS.
I mean, it's great that they're trickling out, you know, news about new games and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's sort of like, you know, all these other, you know, Sony and for example, you know, they will kind of spike it, right? So you'll get spikes in interest, right? They'll announce a whole bunch of stuff and you'll get a spike in interest. Nintendo, they keep releasing sporadic, you know, bits of info. And because of that, they never really build any buzz because it's just a constant hum. So it's almost like because there's a constant hum, after a while people forget and it just moves into the background like white noise. You know?
Yeah. I mean, at this point when we have Nintendo Directs, we just go, whatever, as a site. I mean, we cover them extensively, but
yeah.
It's not the first couple when they happened, like, we stopped the podcast one time because one was going on.
Mm-hmm.
We fucking stopped recording in the middle of the fucking podcast. We're going to pay attention to this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we just run through and then we'll, you know, like, maybe I'll be have my email, my staff email open and might mention during a break what's come up so far.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, they're so rote that Nintendo puts them out at ridiculous times, too. It's like, all right, it's 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
Time for Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
And you're like, so what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sense, I think what's missed now is a sense of Nintendo rallying the troops.
Like pageantry?
Kind of, yeah. And I mean, yeah, E3 goes overboard with that. And I think, you know, Sony and Microsoft, their press conferences were ridiculous. I mean, every year they're ridiculous in some way, shape, or form.
They're worse every year.
Yeah, and they're terrible. But at the same time, they energize their fan base. There's a definite purpose for that, right? And I feel like Nintendo kind of looks at it like, okay, well, what utility are we getting from it? Like, they look at it from that strictly sort of utilitarian point of view. And the E3 press conference isn't useful for us because we can just give out this information over time and we aren't drowned out by anything. But they kind of are drowning themselves out by just kind of not making any big announcements, not making a big splash. That's what's missing, and that's the thing. People get energized around that, and right now I just don't feel like there's a lot of energy around Wii U. I feel like it's just kind of like, yeah, they got the same kind of Nintendo games coming out. Yep, they got Smash Brothers, and they got a Mario game coming out. You know, whatever. You know, and that's cool.
Yeah, I think
and that's good for their fans. I mean, you know, Nintendo fans, of course, like Nintendo. I mean, you can't fault them. They are giving Nintendo fans exactly what Nintendo fans want, but at the same time, people.
That's all they're giving.
That's
them.
All they're giving them.
And I think. They're checking the checkboxes.
Yeah. Yep.
So before this becomes, we get an email about this being too negative, assuming we haven't already gotten
yeah.
it. Sorry, bros. What stuff did they show that you're actually excited about?
I thought that the Batman game that they showed, the side-scrolling one, looked really cool.
Yes. I'm sure what that's called now.
I think it's Batman something gate. I can't remember. I saw it for a second.
Yeah.
You know, I apologize because literally the stream that I was watching was terrible.
Oh, were you watching the North American stream?
Yeah. Oh my God, it was awful. I mean, I couldn't even really glean any information out of it. I joked on Twitter that watching the stream of the Smash stuff was like playing Smash Brothers Brawl online. Since it was like a slideshow because I mean, I was it was like. I would get like an audio clip, and then it was like Mega Man, and it'll be Mega Man, just like a still shot of him for 30 seconds.
Have you gone back and watched some of that stuff since then?
No, I haven't gone back and watched it yet.
Oh, you need to go back and at least watch the Smash Brothers and Mega Man trailers.
Yeah.
I think you owe it to yourself to see those. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about the Nintendo Direct format, I think we have to address this. If they're going to do this again, they have got to fucking fix their shit.
Oh, I couldn't believe that. I was like, okay, so you're directing every single person that wants to hear about your product to these streams, and they're broken. Come on, Nintendo.
Yeah, North American stream went absolutely to Shitsville at the very start.
Yeah.
I mean, it had like 1.9 million people on it. They used Twitch, right?
It was. I'm not sure exactly what they used. They used Ustream on their official site.
Right. And Ustream can't handle 1.9 million people. It's not meant for that.
Apparently not.
So, it's my understanding that at some point, Nintendo of America was directing people to the Nintendo of Europe site, which was working for a little while, and then the overflow hit there, and it started to get all stuttery nonsense.
Yeah.
I was safely along in the upside-down part of the world in Nintendo of Australia and was able to watch the stream beautifully. I had to go to Nintendo's Bastard Child division to find video of their own stream for a conference event happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bad. So and
they can't do that again.
Yeah, they can't do that again. It just makes them look bad, you know?
And it's amateurish.
You're absolutely right. It makes them look like amateurs.
And if you're going to replace the pageantry with a pre-produced film, it better be fucking perfect.
Yeah. I mean, so
it was. I mean, they could have posted it to YouTube and just been done with it. But I know they wanted it to be a stream. They wanted it to be live. But I mean, they could have used YouTube Live or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have. They needed to be aware that what they were going to get hit with was going to crash whatever they were using.
Yeah.
Because it did. I mean, if you went to their website, it just blinked. It just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like there isn't precedent. I mean, they could have easily, you know, somebody somewhere would be able to tell you how many people were watching last year's E3 streams for, you know, Sony and Microsoft. So,
well, I mean, I think in the past it's been distributed though, because Nintendo basically lets out a pool feed, and then anybody who wants it can push it. So websites would be using their pool feed directly. Nintendo would be hosting it somewhere. It'd be on Spike.
Yeah.
It'd be on. I mean, IGN was using their own bandwidth for it. They basically just had it coming in. So Nintendo was only really sending the video to like five places. Directly.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody had a real firm grasp on what was going to end up happening.
Yeah.
But that can't happen again.
Yeah, I mean,
that was embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because they've turned that into the conduit for delivering news to their fans. So, you know, they have to uphold their end of the bargain and make sure it works.
Yeah. I deliberately saved the answer to this question. For me, the most gleeful moment didn't even happen during the press event. And it's a little bit weird, but for me, just seeing, like, the bullshit they're doing with, like, female trainer as being the secret character and just watching the internet totally revile the decision.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
There are websites, and I'm not going to name names because they're my personal trolling grounds, and I don't want anybody to start hunting for me there.
Yeah.
There are websites devoted to, like, the most hardcore Smash Brothers fans, and during the old Japan Times, where Sakurai would post ridiculously written blog posts, I'd go there and just troll the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And, like, I went and, like, recovered the password to my old account, went and logged in, and just read the shit storm.
Yeah.
And, like, I wasn't laughing at the people there. To a certain extent, I was. But I was laughing because it was more like, Sakurai, you freaking genius.
Yeah.
You bastard / genius / asshole. Because it's I get it, and I get how this is Smash Brothers. This is their way of saying this is what Smash Brothers is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a serious fighting game.
It's not serious. It's totally irreverent.
It's a woman. It's a glassy white silhouette of a woman wearing yoga pants and a compression top.
Yeah,
doing yoga moves and calisthenics moves and kicking Mario off of a screen.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
That's Smash Brothers. Yeah. And when they showed that trailer, you know, a lot of the hate died down. People were like, all right, this is just ridiculous. Okay, I'm okay with this. But seeing the reaction, it was like watching, it was like when something completely bullshitty happens in Smash Brothers. It's like, and like the person it happens to just drops the controller, just starts just dropping swear words.
But it's like, you know, it's like, have you seen Mr. Game & Watch? It's like, not exactly a serious character.
It's like the it's like when you're playing with somebody who sees what Mr. Game & Watch has that move where he drops like the numbers. Mm-hmm. It's like playing with somebody the first time he drops 7.
Yeah.
And they just get blasted off the screen. Yep. And then it's like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, part of it is, you know, part of it is the fact that you just got your ass whipped by Mr. Game & Watch. It's like,
yeah.
Just take it. You know?
They managed to encapsulate the feeling of playing that game. Yeah. What makes that game so wonderful and so bizarre.
Yeah.
In a video announcing that game, deliberately trolling one of its most rabid fan bases.
Yeah, and I mean that's one of the beauties of that game is the fact that you can play a character that is so ridiculous, and you can also whip somebody's ass with that ridiculous character in a ridiculous way.
Oh yeah,
you know,
it's. I mean, I lost it. So when I was watching when I first saw the video of the trainer, it was a Vine that someone had posted. Off the screen from their press booth. When I actually saw it and heard her, like, monotone-ass voice about giving you workout instructions,
yeah.
I lost it. I mean, I was double over laughing.
Yeah.
I mean, being home team is a really tough job. Uh-huh. You know, running, doing site coverage and stuff like that, it's a lot of work. I probably just became completely unproductive for, like, 10 minutes. Because I just watched it over and over again and just laughed.
Yeah. It's hysterical. Just the fact they would do it is awesome.
Oh, you know? And of course, the other moment for me was the realization that Mega Man's in this game, Smash Bros. Is going to be canceled. And I was about half a second from tweeting that out.
Yeah.
To
well, hold on a second, everybody. Though, James. It's not a Capcom game, so I think he may survive.
That's true. I was about half a second from tweeting that on the official NWR Twitter account, and then said, "Oh, maybe
now
not."
I will say if they announce that it's been switched from a fighting game to an RPG, I think you may have a problem.
Shut it down.
Yeah,
we're turning this into a remake of Mega Man X. Oh shit!
Oh shit! Okay,
everybody get down. Well, this is gonna go
we
wrong.
We got 3 months, and it's gone. It's dead.
We're gonna charge you for a demo.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh god. So. You know. I was more disappointed yesterday than I was today. And in a way, though, because I got to see the games today.
Yeah.
And that helped, and it hurt a little bit, because it demystified them somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, they were still kind of mysterious games, and I've seen them, and I could so easily map them to analogs of experiences I've already had now that I've seen them, that it sort of diminishes. I mean, I can look at 3D world and say, yeah, that looks like a 3D land level almost exactly. And I could see the chaos of New Super Mario Brothers. So in my head, there's no mystery there. Like, when we saw Wonderful 101 last year, that game was mysterious as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like Pikmin for psychopaths.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I looking at? When I saw somebody play Mario Kart 8, I'm like, well, this is Mario Kart 7. I'm like, oh, but there's bikes, so it's Mario Kart Wii as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw Donkey Kong Country Tropical Breeze Smoothie Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'm like, this is Donkey... I mean, as I was standing in line, and it was... It may not have been a Nintendo employee, although he used first-person pronouns when discussing.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, actually. He was, at the very least, was trained by Nintendo because he knew his shit. He knew his shit cold.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the Best Buy event, for reference. They handed me a 3DS XL... with the original Donkey Kong Country Returns port in it to play while I waited in line to play Donkey Kong. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, this is too much.
Yeah.
So, like, the comparison was right there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the most obvious one, when you're playing Wind Waker, you have the very obvious analog of Skyward Sword.
Yep.
Yep. No, no, no comment on that, John.
Yeah.
Just didn't pay attention. I think the lack of mystery there hurts a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think... when you're not at the show floor, I think part of what makes the allure so strong is the mystery of what is going on. Like, you read the impressions, you see the pictures, you watch the video, and you can usually construct a reasonable facsimile of what playing the game is like in your head. But I know exactly what playing these games are like, and I didn't have to do this sort of, you know, build a virtualization of the game in my head. I know what this is like because I've played these games before.
Yeah, I mean, that was with me and Mario Kart 8, right? So, you know, I saw the game footage of it, and I was like, yeah, okay, so you can drive upside down.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is cool.
That's cool. I mean, that's my reaction to everything. That's cool, but...
Yeah. There's no follow-up. It's just, oh, that's cool.
It's, yeah, I mean, that's kind of their lineup.
I mean, oh, there's a Luigi's Mansion base course. That's cool.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what's next? Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the X trailer, which is a game that I could not be more aroused for, period. Like, it's to the point where it's not healthy for me to be away from that game. Mm-hmm. Even that trailer felt less mysterious and less interesting and less involved than the original trailer they put out for it. But they showed so much more.
Yeah. Well, they showed a lot of mech stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and they showed at the very end, there's only one really truly mysterious shot. That first trailer for that game, they only showed you like tiny snippets of stuff, so you kind of had to figure out what you're looking at. That they only had one thing at the very end where you see a mech fly by, then you see two more, and then it pans back. You can tell it's a video, and they are fighting some big ass monster thing that's got lasers on.
Yeah,
like that shot, I was like, oh hey,
yeah. Like, that's really the last time in any sort of Nintendo Direct where I've been like, whoa, what the hell was that? That looks amazing.
Yeah, you I'm know? Like, what is that? I want to see this.
Yeah, I mean...
And I think the trick when you're doing these things is to make you want more of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard when it's a game that, yeah, maybe I want to play that. I mean, I want to play 3D World. I took off from work today to make sure I had a chance to do so, amongst other site business, but... That's for Neil, if you're listening to me. But I wasn't sitting here going like, oh my god, this I gotta see. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, okay, I've got it. It's on my shelf right there.
Yeah. I felt like that with for a while with all these Nintendo Directs. It's been sort of a, okay, that's cool, but what else you got?
You know, and the only place where I'm left with significant mystery, and this is going to sound really dumb, and you're going to make a mystery dungeon joke, so fuck you ahead of time, but is Pokemon X and Y.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the most interesting Nintendo title that Nintendo is releasing this year.
And it's super weird, because it's Pokemon. It should be like, oh, whatever, it's Pokemon. It's perfunctory. It's, you know what you're getting. But they keep announcing all this stuff that's in the game, and I'm like, well, how does that mesh inside the existing structure of a Pokemon game?
And how is it going to look on 3DS as well?
Yeah, I mean, from what we've seen, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
It looks like, all right, we're going to simultaneously launch this game around the world. Whoa, really? And like, including these other regions we've never released to before. What?
Yeah, I mean, Johnny on Twitter, I mean, Johnny is the most jaded Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, especially about Pokemon.
And I mean, he said that he's like, you know, as jaded as I am, it looks like a huge step up for the series. For him to say that is actually very impressive because he doesn't, he's pretty harsh on it.
And weirdly, they've not really released that much media for it.
No, it hasn't been it hasn't been a flood at all. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm really curious about it. You know,
I mean, we're obviously gonna get a Nintendo Direct on it before it comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna get one about freaking Wonderful 101. So we're damn sure gonna get one about this.
Yeah.
But like, that's the only game where I'm like, oh my god, I want to know about that. I mean, I've skipped the last three Pokemon games.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, okay, this is going on my schedule.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, it's come down to I've had conversations about what letter do I like more.
Well, even Link Between Worlds, I mean, it's kind of this, it's like, I get it. I feel like I get the concept of that game, you know?
Right. And that game's still somewhat mysterious because ultimately they've shown some stuff where it looks different. And what bothers me about that game, worries me about that game is that they're reading the tweets of people who were at the event where they talked about it. Like, one of the things they said was, be sure to remind people that this isn't a remake. This is a new game. Mm-hmm. It's like, if the producer of the game is having to say that, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
It should be self-evident.
Yeah. It should be so different that there's no...
And I think it may be. It's just, I haven't seen a lot about that game. I mean, we didn't see much about 3DS at all, as we've talked about. So, it's hard to judge. Like, I'm surprised they aren't talking about stuff that's closer at hand, though. Like, they didn't talk about Phoenix Wright. I mean, that game should sell some copies for them. For Capcom, at least. Mm-hmm. They didn't talk about, you know, anything that Square Enix is doing on 3DS. They didn't talk about anything that they're doing on 3DS, really, except Pokemon.
Yeah.
And as Greg points out, Pokemon probably doesn't need it, because that game, coming out the same day in, like, 9 territories, is probably going to sell a million plus copies of it.
I mean, again, you know, I don't know if I ever told the story on RFN, but I had, you know, I take the train to work, and one day I actually had a random guy gets on the train, and with, you know, he had like his wife and three kids in tow. So he's sitting there, you know, holding a kid in his arm. And, I mean, he's just, and he saw me playing my 3DS, and his son was like, "Hey dad, that's a 3DS XL." And he's like, no, that's a 3DS. And so, you know, he talks to me and he said, "Hey man, what are you playing?" And I think at that time I was playing, Mega Man 2, I think. And so I told him that. He's like, "Oh man, that game's amazing." And so, you know, he just sits down beside me. We starts chatting it up. And so sure enough, you know, this was so funny because this guy was like a big linebacker. I mean, he was a huge guy. Like, you know, I mean, I said that he looked like a cross between Exhibit and, Jerome Bettis. That's what he looked like.
Oh my God.
He was a big dude. But he's like, you know what I'm really looking forward to? Pokemon X and Y. He's like, "I am going to get online and I'm going to whoop some ass in Pokemon."
Oh my God.
He's this big football player looking guy. And he's like, and so this is just a random guy that I just happened to run into on the train, and he's psyched for Pokemon X and Y. So that game is going to sell through the roof, especially on 3DS. Man.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. They're going to release it everywhere at one time.
Yeah. I mean,
like, it's just like they want to make their investors crazy.
Yeah.
Like, because how are you going to read their numbers report when they release Pokemon literally all over the world on the same day? Like, how do you make sense of that when they release their quarterly numbers? Like, okay, how much of this is better and how much of this is fucking Pokemon?
Yeah.
And how much of this do I really care? Like, if it's like, fuck, I don't care. Just give me the money. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't even care really what they release about that game because it's just like, I'm just going to get it.
Yeah, it just sounds like, I mean, they had that really long roundtable last night and they had so much stuff in it. Like, they're just, like, you can kind of tell they're just rattling off features that they want to talk about. Because they're just like, okay, well, there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this. And there's no real rhyme or reason to the pattern they're following. They're like, oh, and there's two types of new battle mode, and also you can listen to whatever music you want during battle. Like, they're just, you can tell they're almost somewhat overwhelmed by the amount of stuff they've put into this game. And that's kind of amazing. And that, it gets me somewhat excited to see they're so excited. And maybe that's part of what didn't do it for me about Nintendo Direct. Because usually you can see if the developer's really excited about their game when they walk out on stage and talk about it. And you really can't see that in a Nintendo Direct because it's Iwata standing in front of a green screen.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like they could have just kind of accomplished the same thing by just throwing up a bunch of trailers on YouTube.
Yeah, they probably could have.
You know?
I mean, if they don't want to do the expensive press conference because they don't feel like it's a real press conference and they want to still make a spectacle out of it, but not too much of a spectacle, I think they've got to figure out some mechanism for really conveying excitement about their product. Mm-hmm. And I think that was thoroughly lacking in just video.
Yeah. You know, it was kind of at a weird time. I felt like Tuesday morning. That's just a strange time. I mean, a lot of people were at work.
Well, I mean, that's when they do their press conference usually.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 3 hours earlier.
Yeah,
though.
The thing is, they don't have to work within those constraints, though. I mean, that's one.
No, they don't.
So I don't see why they felt like they had to.
I mean, I think there's a certain stigma that if you're not doing it, if you're doing it on, like, the Friday before, like, Konami or something like that, that, you know, you've been relegated to this place where you're not important.
Yeah.
I think they want to be there once the media firestorm begins. Because there were media still landing in Los Angeles when Konami's dumbass video thing happened.
Yeah.
And I think to a certain extent you have to be later, if only to convey importance.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean...
Yeah, I know.
It was. I mean, it was weird. I don't know why they didn't do it. For example, before Sony, I mean, they were only on there for what, 45 minutes,
something
right?
Like that,
and I mean, like, why don't you do that at 8 o'clock, and then Sony comes up at 9?
Well, shoot, you could schedule it at 9. You'd be done by the time Sony starts.
Yeah, very true.
For those of you who don't follow press
very
conferences,
true.
Sony's press conferences always start really.
Yeah, and
late.
I mean, Sony actually really didn't even start to talk about anything for probably a good hour and a half in that press conference.
It was a little weird. It was so bad.
Yeah.
It was. It's that standard Sony bullshit though. Like, we're gonna schedule this press conference for 9. You get here on 9:30.
Yeah. I mean, it started at 9:15.
Yeah, and they didn't really start for like 4 minutes after that.
And what was up with every game freezing? What the hell? I was like, what is my stream screwed up? I'm like hitting my television, and you know, like, what the hell is going on? And nope. And the worst thing was, I felt so bad for some of the guys, you know, playing those games, because there was the one guy, I forget which game it was, but you could just see him on stage, and he was just kind of like moving over to the side, just wincing, like, oh god, this is so terrible.
Well, the Assassin's Creed one, where they basically like Shepherds caned them off the stage when it froze.
Yeah, it was so bad. I felt so bad for those guys.
It's deadlocked, like, and they're just like, oh shit.
Yeah,
it's gone.
But it's like, I mean, how can you? Again, it goes back to sort of the whole, you know, thing that we were saying about Nintendo Stream. How on earth can you have a setup that allows that to happen? I can understand if a game locks up, but there was something going on there where they were like trying to stream it off of something or something like that.
Maybe they were Gaikai-ing it. I can't wait for the first E3 demo of Gaikai, because that's going to fucking fail so bad.
Touche, James. Well played.
Oh,
well played.
That's going to be a disaster.
Dave Perry's in the back like, fuck. Fuck, I knew this would happen. Fuck, but
I should have reset the server.
Yeah,
damn it.
He's like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm hopping in my Ferrari. Peace, bitches. He's gone.
Oh, my God.
You know,
he's
I'm
just
going to Tahoe. I'm out of here.
It is sort of the danger you take when you have a live event, is that's just going to go badly wrong.
Yeah.
And by doing a Nintendo Direct, in theory, Nintendo ameliorated the problems. But in fact, they exposed themselves to a new one. And by being the sole source of their stream, they effectively put all the blame on themselves. And I mean, if you were watching on like GameStop,
mm-hmm.
GameSpot, and their stream just fucking shit the bed, you would be like, God damn it, Nintendo. They'd be like, God damn it, GameStop.
Yeah.
If you're watching it on Game Trailers, you'd be like, I don't know, I can't say this. I can't make my joke I want to make because we have former alumni there. Mm-hmm. But it was the obvious joke about a certain food product. But I mean, it's sort of this weird situation. They found that even though by doing the stuff to avoid potential embarrassment, they still managed to embarrass themselves.
Yeah, and that's really kind of what's frustrating to watch is, you know, this. They try to simplify things, but instead take the simple and make it complicated.
You know, I want to say, though, before we wrap up, because we've gone a little bit long, I like, ultimately, having experienced it now, I like what they did with the Best Buy experience.
Yeah.
I didn't like the guy there. I'd probably never seen a shower before in his life.
But, how long was the line, by the way?
So I got there about an hour before they were scheduled to start.
So this was the 4 to 8 one, right?
Yeah. And there was a girl there in front of me. She'd been there for a little bit. And then there was a couple there. They'd been there for a little while. And I was behind them. So she went up and played Wind Waker for about 7 minutes. And then they went up and played Mario Kart. And then I went and played a 3D world.
Mm-hmm.
But when I left, and I actually posted this to Twitter with my first finds, because now I'm a hipster. I actually posted a video of the line 20 minutes after the scheduled start mm-hmm. time. And it goes down an aisle, turns, and then goes about like five aisles long
mm-hmm.
after the tail. Keep in mind, they had pulled this one off the list and put it back like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the only one in the area, true, but there's demand to play these games.
Yeah.
And Sony's demo sort of explains the risk in making them available and that they can hard lock.
Yep.
But Sony also is dealing with the console that's still probably in development to a certain
mm-hmm.
extent. So there's that plan there too. But I really think, and even though I said having the mystery is part of it, I really think that maybe it's time that some of these games go out there and you can just download the demos.
Yeah.
There's no way they couldn't have cut a Wonderful 101 demo that's stable. That game is almost out in like 3 regions.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way they couldn't cut a Pikmin demo that could go out and be playable
absolutely.
And be reliable.
Yep.
So why not just do it? Now, weirdly enough, neither of those games are at the demo kiosks, but I mean, you're saying they couldn't. I understand they have to test this stuff, but if they're going to expose it to the public at Best Buy, they must feel somewhat confident in the demo.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, for any of those things, they just break off a team that's testing one segment, one level of the game.
Right. Just beat this level into the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a pretty good selection. I mean, in Mario Kart, there were 3 tracks that you got to run through, and there were like 9 carts. So there's enough.
That's not bad.
There's enough variability there that you could pretty fuck things up pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean, I would only expect maybe 2 or 3 carts.
Yeah, I mean, there was enough there that you could find a scenario where you broke the crap out of the demo. Yeah. But I didn't see it. I mean, everybody was playing Mario Kart, which I think is telling. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, now what's weird is the Mario Kart demo only lets you play two player, but everybody wanted to play Mario Kart. Donkey Kong had very little requests for it. Wind Waker had one request while I was there, and you know, I was one of only two people who requested 3D World.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they probably could have gotten Mario Kart working.
Yeah.
Even if it was a simplified demo. Yeah. They probably could have gotten 3D World working. I mean, there were six levels of 3D World available to play. I mean, that's a lot of
Yeah, that is quite a bit.
So, I mean, these were well-put-together demos that they had exposed to the public. I mean, I think maybe it's time, if Nintendo wants to move away from the pageantry of the show as being the be-all, end-all, and instead focus on just communicating their message in a more intimate scenario, I think it's time to start putting these things out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's this year or next year, but I think one of the platform holders is going to do it. I just don't know which one it is.
Yeah, yet. I mean, the thing is, I'm sure it would generate some positive press for them during E3, you know?
And they get to control message.
Yep.
And Nintendo loves controlling the message.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd probably be murder for our site ratings, but it'd be great for them.
Yeah.
I kind of want it to happen. Because I know if I can't go to E3, I'll be able to play the game.
That's the thing, yeah, exactly. It would be something to look forward to, right? Like, oh, I can't wait for E3. Yeah. I can't go, but I can get to see all the, you know, it'd be like a little something you can mark on your calendar.
Right. I'll be able to download these games. Maybe they're only available for a couple days.
Yeah.
Maybe once the show floor closes, you can't download them anymore. Just, but
that would be cool, though.
If you're going to take the pageantry out of it, you still need to make it an event.
Yeah.
So people care.
You know, make it something fun where it's like, hey, you know, the show floor closes at 6 p.m., so that's when they're taken down.
Demo shuts down. I mean, the Best Buy, they did a really good job trying to make them events. They had item giveaways. They had somebody there who really knew everything coming out for the systems. And they had 3DS demos you could play that were games that you would want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them were on the shelf right next to you. You could buy them. But there were a couple that were pending releases.
Yeah.
Or just out in some cases.
See, I think what would be a good idea is to have something in Miiverse. You know, have sort of a, you know, because it makes me think of like Camp Hyrule back in the day. Everybody used to love Camp Hyrule.
Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah, I mean, something where, you know, have like a specially themed plaza that looks exactly like Nintendo's E3 booth, where you could go in there and then you could walk up to a kiosk and it would launch one of their E3 games. And then you could comment on it. I mean, that would be awesome. You know, something that would be something for people to look forward to. If you did that year after year, people would, you know, word would get out and people would just, it would become huge.
Right. I think they had the right idea with the Best Buy events. I really do. And I know they didn't go to all the Best Buys. I know there's lots of markets that weren't served.
Yeah.
And I know that sucks because I thought for a while, hey, I'm going to get one. Then they took mine off the list. I'm like, fuck. And they put it back.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if you're not in a market that had one, it stinks.
Yeah, it does nothing for you.
It might make you make it worse.
Exactly.
But I mean, given the number of people that were there at 4 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, when ostensibly, I mean, there were people there who should have jobs, and schools here aren't out yet. I mean, they're close.
Yeah.
I don't think they're out. I think they get out this week. So, I mean, maybe they 4 o'clock they'd be out of school at that point. But I mean, it wasn't a real young crowd there. I mean, it skewed older. It was a lot of people in their 20s, a lot of people like parents with kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing. I mean, they didn't really do that much to publicize it either.
Yeah.
So this thing. There's no signage outside. Mm-hmm. This thing did well for them. I think you see it expand next year. I think they come up with the philosophy to get these games into as many people's hands as possible. I think ultimately the goal of E3, of the show floor of E3, is to build word of mouth for a game. What better way to build word of mouth than being like, hey bro, you should go play that game right now. It's on the eShop, but you have to go get it today or it's going
down.
Yeah,
I mean, it really plays into, you know, what kind of Nintendo preaches, where they're like, you know, our games may not necessarily blow you away if you just watch them in a trailer, but if you play them, you'll really like them. So, it's exactly like you said, what better way to prove that point by getting these E3 games out there to the masses and just letting them, not necessarily, instead of talking about them and showing them, actually have people playing them.
Right. And then they can talk about them with other people. Yeah. And then they're talking about that time I played that game. They're not talking about what Jeff Keighley said about New Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, or like, you know, what you saw in a Battlefield 4 trailer or something, right?
Yeah, like the oh my god, they're making Star Wars Battlefront 3. Well, yeah, great. Yeah. It's pre-rendered
video. I watched this video of Gran Turismo 6 and they talked about tessellation.
they showed 35 seconds of a solar collector.
That was classic, man. That killed me. I'm just like, man, who actually cares about this stuff? I mean, just Gran Turismo, I get it, right? But who gives a shit about tessellation? I mean, come on.
Oh, I think that was my favorite tweet I did.
It was
tonight.
Awesome. It was what killed me was I read it and I'm just like, yes, you're totally right. I thought the same thing. I was like, tessellation, and they're just showing like a headlight. I'm like, come on, man. I mean,
for those of you who missed it, it was a GT6 trailer. We all knew that's what it was. It was Sony's first car porn trailer of the night, because they had two. They had Drive Club, but it starts with them just like panning around a solar collector for like 20 straight seconds.
Yeah, and they're flashing on the screen all this new stuff that they've put in the game, but it's all kind of like really techno babble jargon kind of stuff that to anybody that's playing the game really just doesn't matter. And one of the things they talked about was tessellation.
It was the strangest shit I've ever seen. And I'm like, so the tweet that I'm referencing is I basically made a fake quote for the producer of that game. It said something like, I spent 4 months inside a solar collector to get the best representation of how these solar cells look. Because that's the kind of shit these car porn games do. They're like, we spent 18 hours a day studying the fractures along the light.
Yep.
Of a quadruporte when you hit it with a baseball bat.
That's exactly it.
For 13 months.
And
you're like, why?
Know, God bless them, because the games are amazing. They're technical marvels. But, man, you could just tell that at some point Sony said, look, everybody knows what Gran Turismo is. I don't got anything else. Do you have, like, talk to the engineers. Do they have anything? And they just got, like, a laundry list of technical stuff from the engineers. And they said,
just put it in. Just
they
do
said,
it.
I think I know what that means. Put it in the video.
It's funny because the Drive Club demo or the Drive Club trailer they'd had like 3 months earlier was just the same.
It
bullshit.
Was. It was like with the mesh on the seats.
Yeah, like we spent hours studying the stitching on the mesh on the seats. So that was when I made my most retweeted tweet ever, which was I made a joke about we studied what would happen if you masturbated over every inch of the car.
I mean, it was absolutely hysterical. Just stuff where
oh my god,
where for a second you're like oh wow, that's amazing. Wait a minute. What the hell does that even mean? Why do I care about the mesh on the seat of the car? What am I going to sit there and, you know, for like an hour saying, well, I can just see it now, you know, in the Edge review. Well, we were going to give this a 9, but the mesh just doesn't look convincing. It's going to be an 8.5. Sorry.
They cross-stitch in the quadruple.
Yeah, you know. It's much better in Forza. Sorry. Sorry, Gran Turismo.
Oh, my God. In Forza, they understood that the leather inlay is actually a diamond stitch.
Exactly. Like,
they got that shit right.
Like, just once, I would like to see them come out with something that just completely made fun of that. That whole thing, that obsessive detail where they could say, look, we're so obsessed that, you know, we go around and, you know, all we talk about is ridiculous stuff like that.
I mean, for us, to bring it back so we can wrap up, for us, what that really typifies is the exact opposite of what Nintendo says they want in their games.
Yeah.
Like they said, you know, we don't want to bury you in these, you know, completely meaningless numbers. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about polygon counts. We don't say ridiculous statements like, until I had 16 billion polygons, I couldn't represent true human emotion.
Mm-hmm. Emotion engine aside.
Until I had 16 billion Jasons,
yeah, exactly.
I couldn't get human emotion. Yep. If playing the game is how you have to understand it, then, and if this is how they're going to present themselves now, that's a bridge they probably need to cross. I mean, they probably almost have to. And, I mean, it's sort of, then going to E3 is more about talking to people. It's not so much important about getting hands-on time with the games. Mm-hmm. And I think that may be better off for everybody, because I think then the media is able to spend more of their effort, you know, talking to people who made this game and understanding the decisions they made and really getting to the bottom of what these games
are. Yeah, I mean, I feel like one of the things that Nintendo isn't doing well with Wii U is actually getting out there and kind of beating the drum for their own console. I think they did that really well for Wii. And I think that's kind of the reason why it caught fire is that they, you know, actually went out there and they said, hey, look at what this console can do. And I haven't really seen that very much for Wii U. It was kind of a soft launch. It was just kind of, you know, there hasn't been, I mean, and that's kind of been, I think that's kind of the point that we're getting at is like around the Wii U, there hasn't really been a lot of pageantry, you know, that sort of.
There hasn't been passion.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It feels kind of like a passionless launch right now and kind of a passionless product and sort of a, like a lot of the stuff, I mean, the phrase that we've used before is just, you know, it's just been a very checkboxy by the numbers sort of game selection kind of thing. Every once in a while you get something that's, you know, new and kind of different, but it's just kind of like the stuff where you're just looking at Nintendo's lineup and it's just like, okay, yep, of course they're going to have that kind of game. Of course they're going to have a Mario Kart and a Smash Brothers and a Zelda and some sort of Mario platformer. But
yeah,
it's like that's what you expect from every console.
The passion needs to come from those games, you know, really having, really evoking something. And like I said earlier, if you don't put the developer out there, you just have Iwata talk about the game. Iwata isn't emotionally connected to these games because they're not his. I mean, he made games. So there are games he's emotionally connected to. I'm sure he understands what it means to be emotionally connected to a title.
Yeah.
But these aren't his titles. So I don't think he's got the emotional investment with them that if you were to bring out a developer who has spent the last, you know, 3 years making this game to really evangelize for it. I think that was what we lost in the Nintendo Direct, so it made it feel a bit more passionless than it did otherwise. But at the same time, they're not doing that even in the best situations.
Yeah.
So if they can make E3 less about putting on a big dumb stage show and less about like did ending with Nintendo Land ruin the show for us, and make it less about just the press needing to get time on the consoles while they're still available. Mm-hmm. And make it more about, you know, engaging and getting their story out there, getting their perspective on the gaming industry, explaining themselves, evangelizing their own product, getting the people who made these games in front of people who can spread that message
for
them.
Yeah, I mean, building stories around the game. I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, you could say what you will about, you know, Sony's press conference and, you know, but at least they do get the devs working on these games out there and you can tell they're passionate about them. I don't know if it's necessarily effective all the time, but you kind of get to connect with the people that actually make these games, and you realize that, hey, they're showing off the game that they're making right now. It's not – whereas Iwata is sort of – I feel like he's kind of like a – he's the front man for everything going on behind the curtain. And that's cool, but if some of these people, you know, could get out there – aside from I feel like you always get the same cast of characters. You know, you get Iwata, you know – even like, you know, Aonuma, you get the same comments from the same people all the time. But it would be nice to say, nice to put some of these other people out in front of the camera, like, hey, I'm art designer on this game. This is why we did, you know, this is why we made this game look this way. This is what we're trying to convey. That's really interesting to me.
I mean, Aonuma is probably the most, I mean, Miyamoto can be passionate when he goes out there. And you can see, I mean, there are times where I've been at a press conference and you can see he's really invested in this game. And he's super excited about it. And it's contagious. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to put the people out there who really care about the product, who are really excited about the opportunity to talk about it and show it off. But I think at the same time, if you can make getting hands-on time with the game less the sole focus of the show, you'll be able to engage people more and they'll be available to take that message to other people for you. They'll be able to write about the conversation and have to worry less about writing what happens when you press the Y button in Super Mario World while you're in the cat suit. I think that's where I mean 3 years on the show, 3 years there, 2 years from being off from there, I think that's the takeaway that I get. I think you kind of establish perspective when you did it for a while and then you step away for a while and you kind of see it from a distance. You understand that, you know, maybe sending out a 1 gigabyte press kit, Nintendo, isn't necessarily the best thing you can be using your time for. Maybe it's getting, you know, Sakurai in front of a small number of people that he can engage with, that he can show off the product, that, yeah, they've all played it, but he can sort of show what he loves about mm-hmm. it. I think that's more important than just making sure everybody gets that, you know, 1/1,000th of the gaming population of the United States gets to play these
yeah.
games.
I mean, I think it would do them a world of good to get a lot of grassroots support going, you know, because they don't get along very well with the press, right? They never right. have. They've never catered to the press, so the press isn't really friendly to them, necessarily.
Right. So, that, I mean, they get to de-accentuize the gameplay experience. Not the gameplay experience, but just playing the games. Mm-hmm. And they can get the press they can engage the press. They can devote effort to it then.
Yeah.
I think it makes everybody's life easier. I think the press might be a little, we'd be kind of about it. That now, you know, our impressions probably won't get the same ratings, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But we won't get the same hits. But I think we would be able. I mean, getting sit down time with Nintendo at E3 is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a big production.
We don't get that much. I mean, and sometimes what we get isn't really anything you'd want. I think we did okay this year, mm-hmm. but I mean, I've been in those meetings where you get trotted in front of a relatively important developer at a studio, and they're just doing it all day. And
yeah.
by the time you get to them, there's nothing left. They're not passionate anymore. Yep. They're just exhausted. I mean, like I did the Metal Gear Solid 3D Snake Eater one,
mm-hmm.
and it was the producer of that game, which wasn't.
Was it Ryan Payton?
No, it was Japanese producer. Okay. You know, he works under Kojima.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like his 13th appointment that day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no passion in it. But, like, somebody mentioned the fact that they found the frogs in the demo level, which if you know Snake Eater, there's these frogs in mm-hmm. the game and whatever. And somebody mentioned that they'd move the frogs. And he got super excited because somebody went looking for the frogs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you just, you know, it would be a soul-numbing job because you would sit there and you would hear the same jokes made by the same people over the same stuff over and over again. And
right.
Yeah, it's...
That was the only time in that... I was in there for an hour. An hour sit-down with the developers is friggin' impossible to get
yeah.
in three. I was there for like an hour, and that was the only thing I remember from that entire meeting was him getting excited because somebody finally noticed they moved the frogs.
Yeah.
And like, he was like, yeah, we did move the frogs.
Yeah.
Which you didn't. Did you find them though? And the guy's like, no, I couldn't find them. And he's like, ah, they're still in the demo.
Yeah.
You should go check.
That's awesome.
And like, that was all I took from that. But it was fun because like, for a minute, you could just see how passionate he was about mm-hmm. the game. If it wasn't about just having to play the games, if they could bring a large number of the press together at one time and just sit down. And, the roundtables are really good for
yeah.
that. I think the reason Pokemon is enticing right now is because there was passion. They kept going, oh, and there's this in there, and there's this in there. Like, you could see their answers in the questions. People would ask them something, and they'd answer it, and they'd go, oh, God, I wasn't supposed to say that yet, was I? And I think there's a certain honesty in that format that is really conducive. I mean, if they could do six of those during the show, they can't do it because everybody has to play
yeah.
games. If that wasn't an issue, yeah, they could do them during the day.
Yeah, I mean, I would really love for them to bring back something like the Cube Clubs. I think that was a brilliant idea. Just
Yeah, I mean, anything to get the games in people's hands and then focus on what's really important, which is telling your story.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see them have even. I mean, they could even keep it small and have some sort of like invite only sort of kind of, you know, almost secret kind of Cube Club kind of thing, just scattered around the country and just say, hey, we want you to come in and check out these games and have a couple beers. I mean, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that would...
Or here you go. You do that, and when you go, they give you a download code for the demos you've played so that you can show them to your
yeah.
friends. Because then they've already briefed you on this game, and then you can evangelize your friends.
Yep. Yeah,
there
it gives
you
access to Gifted on the, you know, on the eShop or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it happen.
That'd be great.
Well, I think now that we've rewritten Nintendo's PR strategy for them, and they can pay us the millions of dollars they're paying Golan Harris. For those of you who don't know, that's Nintendo's PR company. It's not in-house, obviously, but they can give us all that fat stacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to wrap it up here. John, do you have any final thoughts? I know we've diverted quite far towards more like what they could do if they want to move away from the big the big showiness. But what's your final takeaway from what they've shown so far? Keeping in mind that they could do something completely stupid tomorrow and just make us go, what?
That is, yeah, that's completely true. I mean, I wouldn't.
Usually it's night two they do it, though. Or it's usually night one or night two they do something dumb, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, while I was disappointed, you know, at their showing, I think at the same time, this is Nintendo we're talking about. So I wouldn't rule them out dropping some sort of Megaton over the next couple of months. This is coming for Christmas, by the way. Yeah, and it's 2 months from now.
Oh, that Yoshi game we didn't talk about at all during E3, it's actually in stores right now.
So
Good feel was on top of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. I think it was possibly a little bit more disappointing than it normally would have been, just because within the kind of, you know, within E3, you kind of expect some huge stuff to go on, but maybe that's to be announced. But I just don't think that Nintendo's really kind of rolling that way anymore.
Right. I mean, and then they did condition us for it. I think ultimately my takeaway is Nintendo did exactly what they told us they were going to do. I mean, they totally kept their promise. If they said, we're going to talk about 3D Mario, Smash Brothers. Actually, in Smash Brothers, told us we'd see some pictures. And then they upgraded that to some videos. We actually saw people play the game. They told us they'd talk about Mario Kart.
Yeah.
They told us they'd talk about...
Now, the one thing they didn't talk about, they didn't talk about the price of the console. Which really, that they really did. Surprised me.
Yeah.
That's the gorilla in the room right now.
I wonder if they were just sort of waiting to see what the others did on their price, and like they just didn't have enough time to put a response
together. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have pressure now that the PS4 is $400. They have to respond to that.
So, the internal reporting we've seen is they had a little sales spike last couple of days, so maybe they're going to ride that out. And then they'll have a Nintendo Direct, you know, a month from now, and they'll be like, hey, price cut.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a price cut is imminent within the next 2 months.
I did in an attempt to see how close to Nintendo the guy that was running the Best Buy event was, ask him about the quote, redistribution of the Wii U Basic Edition. Yeah. And he gave me like press release quotes, like from memory.
You know, he's
so
been
either
coached.
He works for Nintendo or he is
has been coached for sure. If they ask about this,
he's like, no. We just found that they had sort of congregated in a handful of retailers, so we're redistributing them. I'm like, how does that happen?
Yeah,
that doesn't make sense. That's not something that.
Why
should happen.
Would they care about that?
Well,
that's the
a,
retailer's
why would they
problem,
care,
right?
And B, why if. If they've been building up at certain retailers, why did they keep shipping them to those retailers?
Yeah, and why are they not encouraging? Why are they not encouraging those retailers to move that stock out with sales or something like that?
Well, yeah, or I mean, their argument was they're not trying to get rid of it; they're just trying to distribute it more evenly across different retailers. Yeah. I'm like, but if all the retailers are doing the sendbacks, who doesn't have Wii U Basics?
Yeah.
What? And it's like, and if you're trying to redistribute, why are you sending them all back?
Yeah, why wouldn't you just make note?
Send some back.
Or why, if you want to, why wouldn't you just, I don't know. Well, but even with that, so you're not shipping new ones out to balance. You're taking what's already existing and rebalancing.
Right.
Why
but
are you doing that?
All of them. You're literally taking all of them back to rebalance.
Yeah.
As opposed to going, oh, you've got eight. You really only need about four. Send us four back. Like, no, send them all back. We'll send you four again later. No.
Yeah, I mean, what it sounds like to me is that some retailers started bitching to Nintendo about how many Wii U basic sets they had. So Nintendo said, okay, we'll take those away from you, give them to some other retailers so they can move, so we can basically halt production on those things over time and make it easier for people to get rid of them.
I think once they get rid of the basic, they can do a price cut too.
Yeah,
they can't. I don't think you can do a price cut while the basic still exists.
That's true. They may be waiting for inventory levels of the basic to go down to the point where they can cut the price,
because they'd have to slash the basic's price to the bone to justify dropping the price of the premium.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they didn't announce a price cut at E3 indicates that they're waiting for something else to happen, right? Like
right.
So, I mean. They're monitoring something to make that happen, because they're obviously not they're not hooking it to some event.
Right.
They're tracking something internally.
So they're tying it to some factor we don't know.
Yeah.
So I think we'll get it, but I think it maybe it should have been during the press conference, but I understand why they'd want to wait it out. Because, A, you don't know, you know, maybe something happens after your E3 that causes sales to spike. And apparently they spiked a little bit. And B, you didn't know what your competitors were going to do. I mean, if Sony had gone out there and tried out another $599 US, and Microsoft did what they did, then maybe Nintendo's like, well, we can stay at 350 as long as we want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they're kind of trying to, like, you know, ride the wave of ill will towards Xbox One, you know. And so, you know, I'm sure they're trying to entice people by saying, hey, you know, you can have a Wii U and you can also have PS4, right?
Right.
Or if you don't like, you know, or just have a Wii U, right? So.
Right. And they didn't do that, which I was a little bit surprised by. They didn't really talk about it. They're like, they didn't take any digs at anybody. They just did what they did and went through. Of course, that video could have been produced a month ago.
True.
They could have shot that in Kyoto back in March.
But I mean, I haven't even really heard any fallout from any interviews with anybody either, right? So, you know, because you know that stuff would be front page news, you know?
Right. Like, oh yeah, play Wii U, not online.
Yeah. Or something like, Iwata makes a joke about, you know, Microsoft's, you know, DRM policy. You know that would be right up at the top of the list, just for drama purposes, right?
Like, yeah, it'd be like, if you don't connect Wii U to the internet for 24 hours, the Wii U just tries to connect again later. Laughs.
Yeah, so.
I think ultimately there are games here that I want to play, and I think that's what's important. I think that there's just nothing here that really just kills it.
Yeah, there doesn't really seem to be a tentpole title, really. Yeah.
So I think if that were there, I think we'd all feel better.
It's just,
so,
you know, that's the thing. For me, it makes me kind of scratch my head when, you know, when this console's been out for, what, almost like 8 months now? And I'm sitting here saying, okay, it's going to be almost another year before I probably get one because of the games that are coming out. So that means that for a year and 8 months, this Nintendo console hasn't had anything to offer me.
Trying to end on a positive note, John.
It's very surprising to me. You know, not saying that any of these games are bad. They're good games.
No, I think there's a collection of good games here that if you bought a Wii U right now, you'd probably go get.
Absolutely, that's exactly it, right? The kinds of games.
It's just not the straw that broke the camel's
back. That's exactly it. They're not the kinds of games where I say, okay, well, I'm going to buy the console for that game, and then.
But man, if that Red Steel 2 remake rumor had been true.
Oh, if only. That would have broken. Yeah, that would have broken something. That's for sure. Probably my heart, but yeah, like that's the thing. Like there has yet to be a game for Wii U that is going to make me say, and that's the thing. The price also plays a factor in that, right? I mean, when I look at my 3DS, the money that I paid for that, I absolutely got my bang for. I mean, I've already gotten so much bang for my buck out of my 3DS. You know, I play it every day. Amazing games for it. I love it. Absolutely love it, and so the price I paid, it was a bargain for the price I paid. But the Wii U, that's the thing. That same feeling, it's just not there yet.
And I think we both agree we'll get there.
Yeah, I think it will, absolutely. But it looks like it's going to be 2014 for that. You know?
Yep. I think 2014 is just shaping up to be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's going
to
be a really huge year. It's just, I just hope the console gets enough traction, you know? Not kind of an also-ran by that time.
Yeah. I think, to wrap it up, I think it's telling. I know I've said that twice now. I think it's telling that we had a comment earlier that they thought about showing the Wii U Zelda. Mm-hmm. Not the Wii U Zelda that we have coming out, but the Wii U Zelda they're developing, the new Zelda game.
Yeah.
And that it just wasn't ready. I think that's more telling than anything, because I think ultimately the fact they were considering it, that would have been their showstopper. Mm-hmm. And I think they, in their minds, they knew it wasn't ready, but they still thought, oh, maybe we could get away with it. Maybe we could do what we did with Twilight Princess? It was, where they had Link riding on horse and shooting a couple of things and set it to music from, God, what movie was it? Was it from Conan?
Yeah, I think so.
And they're just like, done. That's the trailer. Like,
well, but, you know, but I know, I'll leave with this, okay? So this, as disappointing as this E3 was, think about how good next year's E3 is going to be for Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be stupid.
It's going to be dumbest. Because you're going to have, you know, Project X, Mario Kart 8. Well, Mario Kart 8 will already be out. Supposedly already be out by that time.
Yeah, but you'll have Smash Brothers, probably.
It's
you'll probably have the new Zelda.
Yep. Probably another Mario in the works.
I don't know. They'll have hit both the wells in that time. Yeah. You might have the Yoshi game. And then there's the mystery behind it. What else do they have working on right now? Because, I mean, there's stuff we don't know about. So, yeah, I mean, next year is shaping up to be a really good E3.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, for Wii, I think it was the second... Was it the...
The first one was exciting because everybody was like, Wii Sports, oh my God. The second one was...
Yeah.
The third one had Galaxy. It had a bunch of games.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it is, but I mean, yeah, it's time.
Yeah,
I think for them the cycle just fell a little bit wrong for this E3 to be great. And I think if this E3 had been a couple months later, they probably would have been able to show something for Zelda or more for Smash Brothers. I think that ultimately would have pushed them over the top. So the games are there. I'm not worried about it, but. You know, we just gotta wait.
Yeah, I mean, if...
And it sucks, but we gotta wait.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, in terms of the Wii, I mean, the Wii was released in November 2006, and you didn't see games like Mario Kart Wii and Smash Brothers.
2008,
yeah, they
right?
came out in spring of 2008.
Nailed it.
So, yeah.
I mean, we got some waiting to do.
It sucks, but you know, it's... You know.
Well, think about when Mario Kart 7 came out. I mean, it came out, what, 2 years in the 3DS lifespan?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we should probably expect this by now. But, you know, we'll get there, and when we get there, it'll be all the more fun. Not because we waited, it'll just be fun because these games will finally be out.
Yeah.
But on the bright side, hey, Wonderful 101's coming out kind of soon.
And, you know.
I really wish they just announced something really small in the next couple of weeks. Just anything.
Yeah.
But we'll get there.
I mean, it's, you know, I think Nintendo fans will be well served by Pikmin. I think that'll be, that'll be good. That'll be good. I mean, I think for Nintendo fans, I don't think they really have anything to worry about.
No. I think it's if you're not a Nintendo evangelist, maybe there's nothing there for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think next year is when you'll really see. That's when I think that the avalanche will start to come through. And it'll really get those temple titles that just sell forever.
Yes, and that's what Mario Kart games do. They sell forever. They make a ton of money.
Yeah. So.
So we'll see. But John, I think we're gonna wrap it up there because I now have 2.5 hours of audio. Yes, for what was supposed to be a total of hour. So this will be fun. So I appreciate your time, John.
Hey, my pleasure.
Sorry we couldn't work it out. Sorry we couldn't work it out so you and Greg got together, but we'll pull the old gang together at some point, except for Johnny.
It'll probably happen in jail, but that's okay.
This is the bank heist gang. Oh, God. I'm going to talk about the bank heist. All right, John. So, have a good evening. It was a pleasure having you on, and thanks for your time.
It's the podcast, people.
Later.
Later.